American Journal with your host, Tristan Harris.
Welcome to another edition of the American Journal. I'm your host, Tristan T. Harris, and I'll be filling in for the great Harrison Smith. And we have a great show lined up for you guys today. You guys will not want to go anywhere. We have a lot going on the program today. In the first hour, we're going to dive deep into what's underneath the pyramids. Armando Omey will be joining us. He's one of the top Egyptologists who has been covering this phenomenon. Is there something going on there? Is there nothing? There's a lot of argument and debate. And then in the bottom half of the first hour, we have Hugh Newman, the top megalithic structure expert and researcher, to talk about this as well. Second hour, top cop and former top narcotics officer Barry Cooper is making waves with a new documentary called Never Get Busted. It's being featured at film festivals across America. And I'm telling you what, guys, this film is hot. It's getting standing ovations. I had a chance to see it in Hollywood at the red carpet premiere. I got invited. We're going to have him on. We're going to talk about the police state and a whole bunch more. And then in the third hour, Clyde Lewis from Ground Zero is going to come and join us, break down the surveillance state a little bit. We're going to talk about Rex 84. Alex Jones predicted this in his police state videos about what would be going on with these military camps being used as internment camps. And that's what's happening right now. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of different things. We may have some open phone lines. So in the third hour with Clyde, so if you guys are looking for a reason to talk to me, Tristan T. Harris and Clyde Lewis, you can do that. But before we dive into today's broadcast and we have Armando Omey joining us here, I wanted to really talk to you guys about how you can support this broadcast. There's many different ways you can do it. The most basic and rudimentary way is to share in the different forums, share in your posts and in your, different chat groups. Let people know that this broadcast is going on right now. That's the most basic form of activism. You guys can be a keyboard warrior. That would help this broadcast out. But even further, some people don't have the ability to tune in every day. Some people don't have the ability to go out there and preach the good word here. You can help by supporting this broadcast and going to the Alex Jones Show website and picking up some of the great supplements we have there. There's a bunch there. I use a bunch of it. I know I love everything from Brain Force. Right now, they have the Alex Jones Ultimate Life Force. A lot of these products are as high as 50% off. And each purchase really supports this war against misinformation as we're here every day battling evil spirits, per se, and these harlots of the world. So make sure you guys are checking this out because this is how we stay on air. And as you guys know, every day is a battle to stay on air for this broadcast. Not only that, to reach new people, to expand and blow this broadcast up, we need your help. So make sure you guys check that, make a purchase and support this broadcast today. So that being said, I want to do a little bit of a lead about what's going on in today's broadcast. And as you guys know, and me, myself personally, I grew up in a religious household. And a lot of times when you start reading these books, you learn about the history in the Bible. It says, you know, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, per se. Or a lot of people believe they were slaves. Some people believe they built the pyramids. Some people don't know who built the pyramids. And I find it interesting because in Esoterica, Enoch was the scribe of God. And it was rumored that he wrote a bunch of books in the Bible. And in a book written by a Marquette University professor titled The Metatron and Enoch Tradition, it ties the two individuals together. Metatron is a scribe of God. What's also interesting, there is debate today that whether those two deities and the Egyptian deity Thoth are also the same. And the reason why that's important for today's broadcast is there's something going on beneath the pyramids, most likely. And we're going to have Armando Omey here to break that down with Hugh Newman and really talk about this when we come back from break. So don't go anywhere. And if there is a Halls of Amenti like has been rumored, would the history of man be located in those halls like a lot of people believe? Or is it absolutely nothing? You'll learn more when we come back from break. I'm Tristan T. Harris. Don't go anywhere.
InfoWars in outer space.
In the not so distant future,
Earth's last drop of methylene blue is about to vanish, and the fate of humanity hangs in the balance. Captain Alex Jones and his alien crew blast off with turbo force in the InfoWarrior spaceship, chasing a legend, Planet X2, said to hold the purest methylene blue in the galaxy. Through asteroid fields and cosmic storms, they press on until at last the glowing blue world appears. They descend through the atmosphere, finding towering blue crystals and shimmering methylene blue ponds. Filling their jars to the brim, the crew turns for home. Their mission is clear: return to Earth and save humanity. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com.
It's Friday, August 15th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Kristan Harris.
The first time I heard of there being a city underneath the pyramids was about 11 years ago. I had on the show The Rundown Live, my broadcast, therundownlive.com. You can find things there, or rumble.com. /The Rundown Live. You can find a lot of our episodes there, but one of the more interesting individuals I talked to is an Egyptologist by the name of Richard Gabriel. And Richard Gabriel told me 11 years ago that there's a city underneath the pyramids. There's tunnels that go deep, deep down underground. And he didn't know how far deep they went, but he said that he went down in these tunnels allegedly, and that there's points where people would pass out or feel incredibly ill, not knowing why, but it sparked my interest. And just to touch base and piggyback on this, a guest that's been frequent on the InfoWars platform and is also on Band.Video, Josh Sigurdsson of World Alternative Media, and I had the same conversation very similar to this on The Rundown Live several years ago. And so our next guest that's going to be joining us, Armando May, is a distinguished independent researcher and a pioneering voice in Egyptology. He's known for his multidisciplinary approach to ancient mysteries and doing research on these things. He's a voice of reason in this subject, and he challenges the official narrative. He's written a book called The Secrets of the Gods. Welcome to the broadcast, Armando May. How you doing today? And thank you for joining us on today's show.
Oh, thank you to you for inviting me at your show. I am very happy to share this moment with you, discussing about the mysteries of the ancient Egyptian civilization. Thank you.
Okay, so Armando, what got you interested in this? Let's start out there. What made you think that there might be something below these pyramids? Because I've heard rumors for about 10 years that there might be a city or a civilization that once lived underneath the pyramids, that there might be empty rooms, amongst other things. And I know the legends of thought say that there's a halls of Amenti and things like that that are buried underneath the pyramids, but that's all like hearsay, and there's never been really any evidence that something is going on below the pyramids. So let's start out with how you got interested in this, and what was the process of you going around and getting some scientific support for this?
We, as you know, we are working as team, Italian team, the CAFR research project on the Giza Plateau since 2020. First, we scanned the Great Pyramid, discovering empty chambers and conduits, unknown chambers, thanks to the technology we are applying, that is that combined the synthetic aperture radar with the Doppler tomography and called the BioND protocol, that can allow us to scan detect the megastructures underneath the Giza Plateau. Of course, I can't explain precisely what is the core of the techniques because I'm not expert as Filippo Biondi, member of the team, that is a renewed worldwide expert of synthetic aperture radar. But I can say that the technology combined the scan of electromagnetic particles called photons with the phonons, that means particle of vibrations, and we are thanks to this kind of technology, we are able to detect the vibrations of the matters underneath the Giza Plateau. So we can rebuild with through the tomographies what is underneath the Giza Plateau. This allows us to detect the new megastructures. And of course, it is a very important discovery because we can explain this only if we can assume that in the ancient past there was an advanced civilization that built the Giza Plateau, the monuments on the Giza Plateau on the surface, and of course underneath.
Yeah, we're told that ancient man was not as smart as we are today, but we still don't know how they built the pyramids, and it's phenomenal to think that they were able to do this and build this structure, but not only that, create or develop cities underneath, or was built on top of these cave structures. So as an Egyptologist, what are the legends of what may lie below the Giza pyramids?
You have to know that this is not the first time that academics, Egyptologists, scholars assume that underneath the Giza Plateau there are structures, corridors, passages, rooms, and so on. Because already in 1930, for example, Salim Hassan, Egyptian Egyptologist, suggests possible existence of structures underneath the Giza Plateau. So we follow this kind of studies that were made in the past. So this is we are not the first who discuss about this kind of topic. We are the first that discovered these megastructures that explain us that the story of the ancient Egypt must be rewritten, because it's clear that megastructures, the Egyptian during the dynastic age, were unable to build such structures so complex, because, you know, the shaft, for example, so that starts underneath the pyramid goes deep in the underground until 1 kilometer and two. So it means that now it's clear that all the Giza Plateau was not planned by the Egyptians during the dynastic age.
How do you think that they went ahead and did these things, especially when you're talking about digging, you know, a kilometer, 2 kilometers into the ground? And this is from other reports I've heard. Some people claim that potentially a mile deep underneath the pyramids, they have chambers. What were these? What would you believe that these structures would be underneath there? I know there is rumors of the body of Osiris being buried somewhere underneath the Giza pyramids. We don't really know. This is all legend and folklore, but what do you feel the purpose of these structures are underneath the pyramid? Do we know what they are made of? What are they, you know, what would they be used for?
Well, you have to know that since the beginning, when we noted for the first time all those megastructures underneath the pyramids, of course, the first question was, what was their purpose and why these megastructures are connected with pyramids? Could it be a kind of power plant or something like that? Also because in the ancient text, for example, also in the Book of Death, chapter 149, is described structures that are in the underground of the land of Jedu, that is the land of the pyramids. Also in this, in the very discussed document known with the name of Emerald Tablets, there is a clear description of the structures that we are detecting now under the Giza Plateau. So there are lots of clues in the ancient text suggesting the possible existence of something beneath the pyramids and the Giza Plateau. And actually, we are mapping all the Giza Plateau in the underground of Giza, because I have to say that before we must have a complete, a clear map of all the structures that were built underneath the Giza Plateau before to have to propose a possible function of the structures. What I want to underline is that when I studied times ago the Khafre pyramid, for example, I discovered the code that is connected with physics, that is the number 137. That is a very important number, value, for physics, because from it, the main three laws of physics origins. What is important is to try to understand what is the connection of this number, of this value for physics with the structures that were built on the Giza Plateau. This is the second step once we have detected and mapped all the Giza Plateau and underneath all the structure that we have found.
So I was researching the science behind your scans, and a lot of reports were saying that the scans are somewhere near 90% accurate. Now, if I go to the doctor and he tells me I have a 90% chance of coming through of a surgery, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm a little worried, but I'm feeling pretty good. What are some of the, what's some of the pushback that you're receiving based on these discoveries? Because I've read quite a few articles where people are dismissing it, but they're not giving any reason why they're dismissing it. They just want to be, I guess, skeptic. What's your opinion? Is there for sure structures, in your opinion? Are we guaranteed that there's something going on there? Or are you guys still kind of not for sure? Is that 10% haunting you at all?
Well, since the beginning, the academic and passionate researchers, alternative researchers, had a different approach to our to the results that we achieved during the last month. Of course, we are ready. We are going to publish a scientific article on this discovery. On remote sensing, in this article is perfectly explained what is the technology that we are applying to the to detect the megastructures underneath the Giza Plateau. Of course, the skepticism, I believe, is normal. Because everyone needs to better understand what is the technique that we applied. And we are open to any kind of discussion with the academic compound and everyone who wants to know more about these topics. We are certain of the results that we achieved. We are sure at 19% that the megastructures are exactly, as you know, in the tomographies. And what is most important is the experiment that we made on the Osiris shaft, because it is a key point in our discussion, because thanks to the star, we show that the tomography are exactly how actually the Osiris shaft developed in the underground. Moreover, we discovered another part that actually is unknown of the Osiris shaft, and at the bottom there is an unknown chambers with something inside, and this means that it could our the next step in the future when we hopefully receive the permission to excavate on the Giza Plateau to explore also the other section of the Osiris shaft in the effort to know and discover what lies inside this unknown chamber.
You mentioned the Emerald Tablets earlier. I know those are allegedly penned or claimed to be penned by Thoth the Egyptian, and he discusses what I would call a fountain of youth. In fact, that may be the origin points of the stories of the Fountain of Youth that allowed him to bathe and become rejuvenated. And so it makes me interesting. I'm interested in learning what might be below there, even if it was a hall of records, because that's the other thing that might be rumored to be down there, which would be the history of mankind. And I know that there's a lot of synonymous stories throughout ancient cultures, whether it's the stories of Metatron, the archangel who was a scribe of God, or Enoch, who is also in the Judaic text, a scribe of God, or you have Thoth the Egyptian, who is also the scribe of God. And they have very similar stories that are almost, they cross over in many different ways. They're very similar and have a lot of similarities between the stories between the three individuals. There's a possibility that they could be one and the same. And there's also a possibility that these Emerald Tablets could not be genuine. But I know it's an interesting subject. I've read the Emerald Tablets, and I learned a little bit about it. And it seems to be basically what the Emerald Tablets is suggesting, that underneath these pyramids, there's a Hall of Records and potentially the Fountain of Youth. Now, I don't believe in such things, but what if, you know, the kid in me, the Indiana Jones character within me, would love to hear something like that. But let's be honest, it'd be realistically fantastic and exciting if there was a Hall of Records, and the things that we could learn from that, it would be amazing. I just don't understand, how did ancient man build these things and build these deep tunnels? I know Richard Gabriel, when I interviewed him 10 or 11 years ago, he called a lot of these tunnels tube tunnels. And he said, like, tube-shaped tunnels. Is that something that you're seeing as well? I'm just trying to collaborate, you know, his witness, eyewitness testimony to what you guys are finding in your scans.
Yes. First of all, when we discuss about the Emerald Tablets, I am really interested to this to this book. But, of course, it is a very disputable document, because the original source were never found. But at the same time, this is why, as team, we are studying the other ancient texts, such as the Book of Death, the Test of the Pyramids, and many other documents that seems to be really interesting, because in these documents we noted the possible current connection what we are scanning in at the moment. Also Richard Gabriel, but also many other researchers already are on the piece, because they have found during their job of research many clues suggesting and confirming the existence of structures beneath the Giza Plateau. When in Malta we presented, during the conference on Malta, we presented the first images of the underground of the Sphinx, we announced the existence of a shaft connecting the Sphinx with the two chambers beneath the Sphinx. At first glance, we don't noted that possible correlation with a so-called Hall of Records. But our good friends and colleague Trevor Crassi suggest us the possible chambers that could be the so-called Hall of Records. Of course, we can also claim that for sure there are two chambers beneath the Sphinx at the deep of 800 meters. We don't know what is the function and what are these two chambers. Maybe might be the Hall of Records, might be, but we must explore the underground of Giza before to be sure of what we are, what was the function, what lies beneath the Sphinx, and of course, underneath all the Giza Plateau.
Do you feel the Egyptian government knows about this? You would think with all the technology that they would absolutely know about this, and why would they be protecting the secret? It makes me wonder if they've been down there already.
Well, the Egyptian authorities, as you know, actually are very, very annoyed by our study. Unfortunately, I would like to underline, because I believe that the cooperation between team of research is very important. It's very important to share our knowledge, to share the scientific data we are achieving. And I'm talking about the scan pyramid that actually is detecting the pyramids through a different technology that is based on the scan of moons. I believe that if we want to do a step beyond in the understanding of our past, it's very important the cooperation between team of research and not to move separately. Unfortunately, Zaki Awas is still continuing his path. He want to be the star of the Giza Plateau. I believe that it's time to do a step back and to move together in the path of research, because as I said before, it's very important to share the data, the scientific data that both project of researchers are achieving in the effort to move forward in the discovery of our origins, because I believe that underneath the Giza Plateau lies the origins of humankind.
So on the screen, we're showing you the images of what might be underneath the pyramids. What do you believe that the purpose of these cylinders are? And you said that they're showing four. So there's four major structures that you've identified underneath the pyramids. Is that accurate? And then they lead down to what looks like an open space. And for the viewers out there, because I'm not quite sure what I'm seeing here, I wanted to get your interpretation of what these readings are.
The scan of the underground of the megastructures underneath the Giza Plateau are accurate at 95%. So we are really sure that the megastructures developed exactly as you can see. What was the function? I don't know. We are trying to understand what is the function. But I can say that what is very interesting are the clues that we are looking around the Giza Plateau. For example, in the west of the Giza Plateau, there is a very interesting archaeological site known with the name of Tomb of the Birds. The Tomb of the Birds is clearly connected with the structures underneath the Giza Plateau, like the pyramids and the Sphinx, everything, all the network is connected. But what is important is that underneath the Tomb of the Birds, in the past, for example, Andrew Collins explored underneath the tunnels underneath the Tomb of the Birds, noting the presence of water erosion and clues of sodium. It means that in those tunnels flowed salt water. And the salt water may be functional to the megastructures that lies underneath the Giza Plateau. Maybe to produce vibrations or energy or something like that, that we must understand better studying all the network.
Armando May, I appreciate you joining us. Let our listeners know where they can find out more about you and pick up your book, Secrets of the Gods. Thank you for joining us here. We got Hugh Newman joining us, who is with Andrew Collins. I happen to know you and Andrew. I've hung out with them several times. They're very interesting, and I've even gone on adventures with them. Go ahead and let our listeners know where they can reach you and where they can find out more about you.
Oh, I had the chance to meet Andrew Collins and also Hugh Newman, for example, at the Gaia Sphere Event Center for the Ancient Civilization Conference. Oh, but also Michael Tellinger, Robert Grant, and William Harry, and Robert Schock, for example, that we share our times discussing about our topics of interest. The next future, I'm moving to Giza because I will live there with my family, because it's time to go on the field.
Armando, real quick, plug your stuff. Where can people find you real quick? We're running out of time here before commercial break.
Sorry?
Where can people find you?
I'm sorry, but I can't hear you. I don't know why.
Armando May, thank you for joining us. We'll go ahead and we'll publish here where people can find you in the info on the details of this video later. Thank you very much. Hugh Newman will be joining us around the bend.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more Methylene Blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at theologyshow.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
It's throughout. I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I got to get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenstore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it around SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychological. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I ain't going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Interesting individual. He's a real-life Indiana Jones. He's one of the experts on megalithic structures. He hosts one of the largest megalith conferences in the world, megalithomania.co.uk is his website. And he's here to break down a little bit of what we just heard. He's beaming in from the UK here and a personal friend of mine. Welcome to the broadcast, Hugh Newman. Thank you for joining us today. And I know that you've been down in these tunnels and you've been doing your own research with Andrew Collins, somebody else I've had the pleasure of meeting actually through you, Hugh. And I really appreciate you joining us today because you're such a wealth of knowledge. Whenever we have a conversation, it's always fascinating here. And so we got 23 minutes here to kind of break down your research, what we just heard from Armando Mayed, that there might be chambers underneath the Giza pyramids. There's definitely some kind of tunnels and city system going on there. And you've actually been in what is known as the Tomb of the Birds. And we're going to be showing some of that footage here in a little bit. But I wanted to dive into this. So what is your response to what Armando May is saying, that there's these bizarre spiral structures going down to what might be chambers of some sort underneath the pyramids? We've heard in the last 10 years, maybe longer, people have mentioned and even rumored that there's a city underneath the Giza pyramids. What's your take on all this? Let's start there, Hugh.
Well, yeah, I think it's amazing. I think it's really, really good research. I think it's really good analysis. Filippo Biondi is like a proper scientist looking at this, analyzing it, double, triple, quadruple checking everything. And they're not just making stuff up. This is for real. This is something going on, you know, deep beneath the pyramids. Something that I know Andrew Collins and I have been looking at for many years. And I think there's something to it. I mean, I've met Armando and Filippo on a couple of occasions. They're coming over to England in November for our conference as well. And I think there's something going on, especially, I was especially delighted because I got a chance to go inside the cave underworld that Andrew discovered back in 2008. This was like last November. This was like a few months before this big news broke out about the mega structures underneath Giza. So I got a sense of what was going on. There was like a combination of rock carved tombs going deep into the rock, the limestone on the Giza plateau. And then it kind of turned into this natural cave system, which is probably sacred to the ancient Egyptians, even before anything was constructed there many thousands of years ago. And I'm pretty convinced that there was an underground system there before any pyramids were built. I think that's what the kind of, you know, the conclusion I'm coming to, at least, that there was a kind of element there. Like we find at Karahan Tepe and Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, like I've got on my t-shirt here, they were working into the bedrock, you know, and that goes back nearly 12,000 years. And so there could be a correlation because there's a lot of digging into the stone going, you know, subterranean on the Giza Plateau, just like there is in southeast Turkey.
Well, it's fascinating to look at all these tunnels and to think about this and what's going on here, and that you guys have actually started to, discover these little nooks and crannies and caves that might be all connected, that might have been used by the ancient culture. That also explain why the Egypt government is pushing back, especially if these are sacred sites. And here we got some video of you guys playing in the caves and looking around. And what are some of the things that you noticed inside of the caves?
Yeah, we were playing in the cave. This is a good way of putting it. We were like children in a toy shop, I'll tell you that.
I know you guys are always excited. And you guys are really fun to hang out with because you guys always talk about all these Indiana Jones-esque adventures. What was all going on in the caves? What are some things that you guys noticed that made you believe that these are of man origin and man-made?
Well, yeah, you go in first. You know, there's like an entrance, carved entranceway. It's all carved out of solid bedrock. That's the Tomb of the Birds. You go through this gate that was open at the time. We visited there recently, although Andrew's been in there. This is it. Yeah. And this is Andrew's been in there since, you know, going in there since 2008. So you see this construction, it's made by people. And then at the very back on the right hand side, you've got this kind of almost like a kind of broken entrance where you just pop your head in there and suddenly it's this huge cave system that goes on for like, what, a quarter of a mile or something like that, or maybe half a mile, some people have suggested. And you can't actually get through the very end of it. I mean, we're walking up here, we've got the video playing, so we're walking up here. You've got all these chambers on your left and right. You've got some actually underneath there as well. But as you go further, as you get to the end and look on your right, which the video will do in a second, and people can, you know, check this full video out on YouTube. I think it's called Beneath the Pyramids. That's the title of Andrew's upcoming republished book as well. And suddenly it opens up and it is a weird place. It's not for the faint-hearted once you get inside there. This is like there's bats flying around. You can hear kind of noises coming from deep within the cave. You have to have good torches. If you go too far, you're going to have to get breathing equipment because you have all these kind of, you know, there's a lack of oxygen, there's a lack of air getting in there. So this is the first chamber you get into here. And then you continue through another gap and walk, you know, a quarter of a mile into the cave system itself. And there's blocks lying around. They found mummies in here, like bird mummies. amongst other things. And so this was used as a kind of ritual space as well as just a tomb, like the first part of the Tomb of the Birds. And it's technically it's called NC2 Cave. It also got named Collins Caves by Zahi Hawass when he eventually went in there a few years after.
Yeah, this whole system is pretty interesting.
It goes direct to, if you continue walking in that direction, you go to the middle pyramid, Khafre's pyramid, where all these mega structures have been found. And so this could be the entrance into the underground system of all of the Giza Plateau.
What do you believe that this underground system could be used for?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, no one really knows. I mean, I like the work of Christopher Dunn. I think his work on the Giza power plant is some kind of like massive technological system. Also the work of Jeffrey Drum, who's looking at the chemicals that were being produced in ancient Egypt, possibly inside pyramids, but also underground. There's evidence of black manganese and iron strips all found throughout this area. So they could have been mining for this. It could be part of their kind of production plant system. And so the whole underground thing, it goes deep into the water table. It could even go so deep, it goes, you know, a mile deep or more. It could even be using geothermal energy as well to create whatever they were creating back then. So I think it's a high-level natural technology that we don't really understand yet. We don't have the full picture. And if the frustrating thing is that the academics and the Egyptologists out in Egypt need to take this on board. They need to take Armando's and Filippo's, their discoveries on board because they need to have a look at it. We need more opinions on this. We need more analysis. We need more science looking at this to sort of back up what they're saying or refute it. You know, either way, it needs to be looked at more thoroughly.
What's the pushback by the Egyptologists? Yeah, I was talking to Armando May and he says that there's some pushback. I've read a lot of articles that are saying that it's debunked or it's going to be debunked. But when I looked up the technology that he used, the SARS technology, they said it's accurate up to 90% accurate. So there's a 10% margin of error. And why do you believe that we're getting so much pushback on this discovery if it is true? There's a 10% chance of error. There's a good chance that there's something underneath the pyramid. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the pushback's going to happen because they didn't go through official channels. This is the reality. You know, this is like the kind of political reality of this. It's like, you know, if they go on through the official channels, like the scan pyramids team do, they do scans inside the pyramid. It would have been different, but they did it themselves and they can do it. They don't need permission because it's all from satellite data. So you don't need permission to do this kind of thing. And so of course they're going to get pushback because it hasn't gone through the official channels. We know that there's underground areas there. We know that of, you know, Belzoni's chamber underneath the Khafre's pyramid. We know about the Osiris shaft along the causeway between the middle pyramid and the Valley Temple and the Sphinx. We know that there's shafts going down there, the work of Trevor Grassi, for instance. And we know that the pyramids themselves have underground chambers. It's not news. This is just like backing up and kind of following up with what's been known about before. And so it is a revelation in some way, but this has kind of been known about. There's rumors of the Hall of Records beneath the Sphinx. Now they found this chamber beneath the Sphinx. So everything's starting to match up. These legends of the Hall of Records or the Halls of Amenti and other such things that Armando mentioned. This is the reality check on all of that. And it may eventually now be coming to light.
Do you think that these Egyptologists that are standard for the government already know that these things exist down there and they're just trying to protect it because of its sacredness? Or do you think that they're just being in denial because that is what the consensus suggests, that there's nothing going on below the pyramids? It's pretty interesting to me that quite often the consensus gets things wrong and they want to protect the official narrative. But at the end of the day, we find out within, and including in science, just look at the COVID debacle or Monsanto or other things where scientific consensus has been incredibly wrong, right? We're seeing that here when it comes to history a lot of times. I know you wrote this book that I have next to me, which is also an interesting subject we can get into someday, Giants on Record, about giant human skeletons being found in indigenous effigy mounds, which also sources me because I did a lot of research, and Hugh used some of my research. That's how we met, on the subject. But, I always was curious on what your take is. Why is it that, they don't want people to find out that there's something underneath the pyramids? Is it because people are going to start asking questions? What's your take on it? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's a very curious question, actually. Like, why on earth isn't this a big deal? Why wasn't it kind of accepted when they made their discoveries? And I think there are known elements underneath the Giza Plateau that have been kept quiet. I mean, one of the examples, which I find really funny, is like when Andrew discovered the Collins Caves, if you like, or the NC2 Caves, Tomb of the Birds, back in 2008. He kind of did it officially. He mentioned it to the authorities, and then Zahi Awas claimed outright, no, these caves don't exist. They've never existed. We don't know what you're talking about. And then 6 months later, he went in there and filmed a documentary inside the cave claiming he'd kind of discovered them. So of course they're going to claim things don't exist. It's the same with the giant story that myself and Jim Vieira were writing about a few years ago. And, you know, we covered some of your research in that book as well, obviously. But that is like a big cover-up, but now there's so much data, there's so much evidence that very tall human beings existed in North America. It can't really be refuted. It's in the academic journals. And likewise, there's lots of accounts, if you go back over a few hundred years, of discoveries being made deep beneath the Giza Plateau. And so to me, it's not news. This is just following up what has already been put out there. And so why it's such a shock to the academics, to the Egyptologists, I don't really know.
So I want to dive into a little bit on your thoughts on the building of the pyramids. I know I've heard Manly P. Hall in presentations that were recorded. He's a top Freemason, 33rd degree. Mostly his philosophical stuff I found interesting. I'm not a Mason of any sorts, but, I like to be educated on what people believed. And he believed that the giants helped build the pyramids, these large structures, because they were known as the builders of old. And what's your thought on how the pyramids were built? What's going on with these structures that may lie below there? What's your take on it? Do you think that this is something of recent origin, or do you think the pyramids are a lot older than what we're being told by modern science?
Yeah, no, Manly P. Hall stuff. Yeah, you introduced me to that. There's some other Arabian legends that go back to the 11th, 12th century as well. That kind of, which I think Manly P. Hall must have been looking at, because he there's lots of talk about these sort of legendary giants coming over from the land of Ad or Adam, and coming over and building the megalithic structures of Egypt, including the pyramids, including Dashur, including Dendera. I actually wrote an article for Ancient Origins website, a two-part article about the giants of Egypt, because there's actually been some giant skeletons have been reported there as well, which I thought was kind of intriguing. And also, so we've got that side of it. You've got these legendary kind of giants. So no doubt there was very tall human beings around in the past. I don't dispute that. But when it comes to the style of the Khafre's pyramid, for instance, and actually the rest of the Giza Plateau, I really believe that they are older, but the work of Robert Temple has proved through sonar luminescence dating that they're at least a few hundred years old, but I think they could be thousands of years older, because we're not talking about the pyramids, we're talking about the surface, and what is underground, I believe, is much, much older. The style, for instance, I mean, I produced a video like 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, up on the Megalithomania YouTube channel. We're looking at Khafre's pyramid and what's behind it. And one side of the pyramid, the back kind of end of the pyramid, because that's all carved from bedrock. I mean, some of the pyramid is carved from bedrock. People don't realize this. There's lots of underground chambers at the back of Khafre's pyramid, sloping kind of passageways that go underground. They could be another entrance into the, Giza's cave underworld, the kind of mega structures. And they're very similar, and I put this in the video, that they're very similar in style, the way they're working in the bedrock, is what is now being discovered in southeast Turkey, mainly Karahan Tepe, but also at Seybirch, and some other sites, like Göbekli Tepe. They're carving into the bedrock, shaping the bedrock, and going subterranean. And so there's good evidence that there's a connection between these two cultures. Now, I know Andrew's been talking about this. I've been getting into this as well. I made these comparisons a few years ago. And Absolutely. I think, you know, if we're looking at the end of the last ice age, about 11,000, yeah, sorry, about 9,600 BC, then perhaps there was a similar construction phase at the subterranean level on the Giza Plateau at a similar date. And we know there's a connection. There's traditions that link them up, you know, linked with the Sabians of Iran. But there's also what's called the Helwan Point, a type of tool that was used, and it was found in Shanla for the nearest city to Göbekli Tepe, where there's an ancient site, and also in Egypt, not too far from Giza. And so there were direct connections between these two cultures, for sure, and the dating could match as well.
It's interesting you mentioned Göbekli Tepe, mostly because I found that a lot of these ancient structures were buried. I know I asked Andrew Collins, why is it that these ancient civilizations got buried? Even the pyramids, when they were found, they were buried, per se. And it might be naturally in Egypt because of the desert, but across the world, we're noticing that a lot of these ancient structures were intentionally buried, or at least that's what I'm being told. What's your thought on that? Do you think that these were intentionally buried, some of these sacred sites? Was it buried by for protection? What is your thought on this?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the Göbekli Tepe and places like this, there's generally, there's a tradition, there's proof that Karahan Tepe was buried. For a long time, Göbekli Tepe is thought to be deliberately buried. It was almost like repaired and then buried. There's evidence now that some of it was a slope slide, you know, from the build-up around it, all the midland and everything. And so it was partly naturally buried, then it was properly buried by humans afterwards. And really, you know, this was at the end of their culture around 8,000 BC. It had been in use for over 1,500 years. There's now evidence, this is the work of Robert Schock, that some of the sites in Egypt were deliberately buried as well. And so there's a tradition of this. And we know that with Karahan Tepe, there was an academic paper published by the head archaeologist there, Neshmi Karal, who, you know, looked at the buried buildings of that culture and the traditions that kind of led up to that. And so there's certainly a case for that. Why they did that is a whole other question. Was there some kind of cataclysm taking place? Did they have to get out of there quickly? Was it ceremonial? Were they burying it like they bury their dead? You know, were they trying to preserve like a time capsule for future generations? We really don't know, but there's some really good ideas coming out about that, especially because they're preserving, you know, and almost reconstructing parts of the site as though they're trying to put it back into how it would have been when it was originally built.
So what's your big takeaway from the Cave of the Birds? What are some of the things that the system that you have discovered, do you believe it goes completely under the Giza Plateau? Do you think it could connect with other two caves and chambers of interest? Do you think that there's more to be discovered there, or do you think that what you guys discovered is that it? Because some people are saying that there's might be cities underneath the Giza pyramids, and I found it very interesting. I thought, well, what if there are cities underneath there? How many people do you think that those cities could hold, or are those sensationalists making those claims?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at like in Turkey, you have underground cities. You have Derinkuyu, you have Kemakli, you have a new underground city discovered in Midyat. These are like multi-level cities. 20,000 people could have lived in them. Rooms and levels going down, down and down, you know, deep into the ground. So if they can do that in Turkey, they can certainly do that in Egypt. It's not like beyond the realm of possibility. Now, we're not talking about cities like kind of like sci-fi cities that you see in movies, you know, things like this with like flying ships moving around. They could be quite simple. They could be quite basic like we find in Turkey. But I think there's something to be said for the looking at the legends. You've got to look at the legends, you've got to look at the myths, you've got to like bring these traditions and like look and analyze them carefully. Then you have, you know, independents like Trevor Grassi going there, going under the Giza Plateau, finding these shafts, getting inside places. You have Andrew's discovery of the Tomb of the Birds and the caves. And now Armando and Filippo and their team, the CAFRE Research Project, I think they're onto something. I think people, you can't dismiss this until it's been properly looked at. And I think this is where the issue comes, because, for instance, that they've just recently, I believe, closed the Khafre Pyramid for visitors. So you can't even go in there to look at the known underground chamber there. And so that's really strange, really unusual. That why would they do that? Why would, wouldn't they want to kind of promote tourism based upon the, these discoveries being made? Wouldn't they want more people? It's going to get more people to go there. I'm absolutely sure. And so I think they should, promote it. They should like be backing this up and looking into it themselves, because there's certainly, I mean, just the discovery of the Tomb of the Birds and the NC2 cave, there's definitely something underground there. We know it. We know all the other underground areas. So let's encourage the archaeologists and the Egyptologists to go and take a look. I think that's the next step.
Very interesting stuff, Hugh. I appreciate you joining us, and it's always great to see you and Andrew Collins doing new work. I follow you and check out your stuff quite often. I'm very impressed by the things you have done, and of course, meeting you in person. You're a great man in general for your research and some of the quality conversations we've had. I really appreciate the time you've given us and here on the program today. Where can listeners and viewers find out more about you? What do you have coming up? I know that you've thrown conventions. I know you're friends with Graham Hancock and a lot of other people that are making waves in the industry and on TV. What are some of the things that you have coming up that people can go see or attend?
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, yeah, we people can just check me out, Hugh Newman or megalithomania.co.uk. We're doing this, this conference in England. This is, the Origins Conference. We do that. That's part of Megalithomania. And, we do that. That's on November the 1st, for instance. It's a live stream as well. We've got Armando and Filippo coming over. We've got Andrew speaking there, Robert Temple. We've got some amazing, amazing stuff happening there. So people can check that out. And yeah, just check out what we're doing online. We've got a lot of videos we publish, lectures we put out there, and yeah, we hope to see some people around. I'm also in America on the 5th to the 7th of December, running as part of the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference. There'll be a big public thing coming out about that, and we're running a tour next February to Egypt. So we have a lot going on. We like to get out. We like to explore. It's part of the Megalithomania ethos. You know, to get out and go and investigate these sites, make little discoveries on the way. And, hopefully we'll catch up with you soon in one of these places, Kristen.
Yeah, well, we didn't even get into the astrotheological aspect of things and how these things are laid out with the stars. And I wonder how often that can be used to help find pyramids across Egypt, you know, since everything's kind of laid out astrotheologically. And why did they do that? Did they worship the stars, the houses of the Lord? You know, Maseroth, all that kind of stuff. It's all interesting, Hugh. In the last 20 minutes or 20 seconds here, do you have anything else for our listeners?
Yeah, I think people have just got to go out there and explore. Don't hesitate. Get out to these sites. Go and visit them. Make your own little discoveries. Get the insights. You have to go out on the land. You have to go explore it. And if you can get underground, do it.
Hugh Newman is our guest. What a great individual. He's a real life Indiana Jones. So make sure you guys go check out his stuff. When we come back from break, Barry Cooper, Texas's former top narcotics officer, will be joining us about his new documentary that's making waves across America, getting standing ovations at film festivals all over the place. Never Get Busted. We'll be back in just a few moments.
I've been hearing about this for years, and now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at theofficeofthestore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? A lot of you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular Recovery and Defense Matrix. It's also incredible for gut health, and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals, enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.
If you guys haven't had a chance yet, make sure you support this broadcast. Go to the Alex Jones store here, the real Alex Jones store. Make sure you guys check out some of the greatest supplements. They have 50% off. Support the broadcast. There's many different ways that you can support this broadcast, sharing the live stream, getting in the chat, posting links, visiting the websites. But we need your help here. The AlexJonesStore.com is where we have the greatest supplements. I use a lot of the supplements myself. I love them. Just daily, part of your daily routine. You either invest now or you're going to invest later in doctor bills. And I tell you, they got a lot of things. Colostrum is one of the top items that they're really talking about on the store. Make sure you guys support us. Get out there, pick up a t-shirt, whatever it might be, and really be part of this information war. Not everyone can go out and talk to their neighbor or has the attempt to every day and can make a life out of it. Not everyone can do talk radio like me, Kristan T. Harris of the Rundown Live, and reach people. So this might be your way to get involved in the information war. Go to therealalexjonesstore.com. And support this broadcast. That being said, our next guest is going to be a very interesting individual, Barry Cooper. Barry Cooper has a documentary that is making waves across America. I got to see it. I joined him on the red carpet a couple weeks ago. Let's go ahead and roll the clip real quick of the trailer of Never Get Busted.
All right, let's begin.
My name is Barry Cooper.
Barry Cooper.
Barry Cooper, one of the best narcotics officers in the country.
The Barry Cooper story, what's a big one?
Barry was your worst nightmare.
Barry Cooper could piss an entire nation off with a wave of his hand.
Who has the power to pull a gun on you, shoot you, and probably get away with it? It's a police officer.
This is the money that we seized.
The only way for Barry to repent for these sins was to say, I was the villain, now I need to be the hero.
Can you imagine a DVD that teaches criminals how to break the law?
Now the former straight-laced lawman is using his expertise to show drug users how to conceal their stash.
It's all in an outrageous DVD that he's produced called Never Get Busted Again.
He was one of the first people to make a huge public stand.
Oh, I thought he was crazy. You know, I thought he was going to get shot down.
So why in the world would you, as a former drug enforcement officer, want to help people use drugs?
He's developed into this much more dangerous enemy of law enforcement.
We must end this war on our people.
That offended almost all law enforcement officers, and he became a target.
Hey, Rangers, why are y'all being pricks like that? You don't want me busting crooked cops?
We get into some real cloak and dagger Breaking Bad Ozark shit.
Barry Cooper himself is still at large.
Barry broke the code. People wanted him dead.
I was considered one of the worst traitors on the planet to law enforcement. And my response to them was, F you, come get some.
I met Barry Cooper in person just a couple of weeks ago, and when we come back for break, he'll be joining us. And I got to tell you, this documentary is fire. If you guys get a chance to try to find it, it might be in the nooks and crannies of the internet. Barry will be breaking down how you might be able to see this documentary when he joins us when we come back from break. I have to say, this documentary was hot. It was interesting. It was emotional, and it was fascinating all around. I got a standing ovation at the film festival I was at over in Hollywood, California. Barry invited me, got to spend some time with him and his wonderful wife, Mia, and get to know him. Barry's made some extreme life changes as well as he's returned to America. We'll talk a little bit about that, a little bit about busting dirty cops and what led to all this when we come back from break. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris. Make sure you guys don't go anywhere. Let your friends know to tune in, and we'll see you guys when we come back from break here in just a moment with Barry Cooper.
I'm coming to defeat you, evil scum. Defeat you, globalists! I've been waiting a long time for this, Alex.
Decorated Texas narcotics officer. He joins us today to talk about his new documentary, and we're going to talk about the police state a little bit, about the future of policing. We're going to get his thoughts on some of these new technologies such as robotics, drones, surveillance, and a whole bunch more. Welcome to the American Journal, Barry Cooper. We're glad to have you here today. Let's start out by talking about your history a little bit. You are a top narcotics police officer. You are the best of the best from what it sounds like. Your peers said that you actually downplay how good you really were at busting people that, you know, for drugs essentially and changing a lot of people's lives. But you kind of flipped script and became this renegade cop that started busting dirty cops, amongst other things, and you became kind of an icon across the United States that, oh, there are good cops out there that will turn in on dirty cops. And everyone always says, well, if there are good police out there, why don't they turn in their dirty counterparts, amongst other things? So, Barry Cooper, it's great to have you on this broadcast, and it's great to be with you in Hollywood just recently, you and your wife, Mia. It was a great opportunity.
It's been a pleasure being back. You know, I was gone for 13 years and 7 months. So when you and I met in Hollywood for the red carpet premiere, I had just landed in the United States. And I have to tell you, being gone that long, I really forgot how wonderful a country the United States is. After living in third world countries for almost 14 years, and then you step into the United States, it's big, it's massive, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, did it take some time to assimilate back into the American way of lifestyle? You got hot water to take showers with, amongst other things, because you're over out there in the Philippines, if I remember correctly. And so it's a whole different way of life. I mean, the food's probably a little fresher over there in the Philippines. They might not have as many preservatives and things like that. But when you come back to the United States, it's got to be a little bit of a culture shock, shouldn't it? Wasn't it, Barry? Or were you just easily plugging right back in? What are some of the things that you missed from the United States?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's two different planets for sure. I actually braced myself for rude, mean Americans, because online, Americans can be some of the meanest people you've ever met. But I spent time in Vegas, in Los Angeles, in Arizona and in East Texas, and everybody was so nice. I really think the legalization of marijuana and the fact that we were going through generations of kids that have been doing MDMA and mushrooms, it's made the country much nicer. Now, the mental illness has certainly went up in the United States. We all have a touch of that from being Americans. But the Americans were nice. I couldn't believe it. It was incredible.
So what made you make this change? Let's rewind a little bit. You're a top narcotics officer, right? For the people that are hearing from you for the first time and just seeing the trailer of your documentary, what really made you turn and flip script and go after cops? Some people might call you a renegade cop, going after dirty cops, setting up dirty cops, helping out with court cases, getting people. You've gotten a large amount of people off of charges. Just exposing dirty tactics by police. Let's dive into this a little bit. How does the Barry Cooper story start?
Well, it starts pre-internet, where I believed everything my coaches, teachers, preachers, parents taught me, that people who smoked weed were evil people. So when I was out busting people for cannabis, I thought I was fighting evil. Then the internet came out about the same time I went through a divorce and fell in love with a weed dealer. My third wife was a cannabis dealer. And instead of drinking, she told me to try the cannabis. And when I did, it changed my life, helped me stop drinking and helped me see that what I was doing to the Americans was wrong. So I flipped the script and did what I did. It cost me everything.
So let's talk about this documentary you have coming out called Never Get Busted. It's receiving standing ovations all across the United States. I was able to witness it myself. I was up there. It's getting reviews. There's the Medium just put out an article talking about your documentary of somebody that attended the event. It was a pretty interesting piece where they gave you rave reviews. It talks about your recent transformation into Christianity, which obviously you and I have talked a lot about. We were just sharing Christian music just the other day between each other. But the Medium put up a pretty interesting piece by Tiffany Grandstaff, which was a really kind of telltale of what the experience was like. Because when I read the article, I was like, hey, this is exactly what it was like. People were emotional. People didn't know what they were in for when they first saw it. What really made you come out and tell this story? By the way, the guy who produced it is one of the guys that did the Tiger King series, which was a large hit. So it's really interesting to see how your life has really pivoted and changed. And you've made some wonderful self-improvement in your life. So let's talk a little bit about some of these changes, the things that led to the documentary here.
Yeah, so you're right. It's winning awards in the big film festivals. I'm honored and humbled. I hope this day would come. They've been working on that film for 6 years. They poured $4 million into it. And like you said, it's got Hollywood elites backing it. Yeah, it's an emotional ride. It's making people cry. It's making people laugh. It's making people angry, which a good documentary should. The most important thing, I think, is the message of the film is to lay down your life for others. I laid down my life to get Yolanda Madden out of prison. And like I said, I lost everything. My wife was murdered. I lost my kids. I lost my country. It's just a horrible tragedy, but I would do it again. I've bounced back. I just kept getting up, dressing up and showing up. I'm not drinking anymore. I'm not doing any drugs, and I'm ready to see what happens.
Yeah, those are some major changes in your life. And the police state has definitely ramped up since you've been gone. I know you mentioned the Americans are nicer and kinder, but as a person that covers a lot of protests, I've probably covered almost 200 protests in the last 10 years. And I know you follow me a lot in a lot of my work, Barry, as far as covering protests, amongst other things. That's how we really connected. What are some of the more disturbing things that you're seeing with the police state here in America? Because I know technology is getting way advanced. We now have police robots. I don't know how you feel about that. Let's start there. What do you think about police robots? Because it kind of takes out the human element of things. How long will it be until you get pulled over by a robot cop and then it walks up to your door and just hands you a ticket or has no kind of empathy or sympathy of what's going on? We're getting there. It's getting close. I know that people say, well, you know, Kristen, it's a little ways away. But, you know, let's start with the advance in technology. There's a surveillance state and so much more. But what is your thought on the autonomous aspect of law enforcement and the way it's going?
Well, I'm all for stopping violent crime. We've got to do that. I personally don't think cops should be pulling people over for traffic tickets. I think that's caused a divide between Americans and police. I remember my dad getting a ticket when he only had $20 left for the rest of the week, and it almost destroyed our family for a couple months having to pay that $300 ticket. So I'm not for that. The countries I've lived in do not have traffic cops stopping people on their way to work. They just don't work like that, and their roads are just as safe in the United States. So, no, I'm not for robots writing any type of tickets. However, if there's a robot that can somehow stop violent crime, let's do it. The problem in the United States is we got too many laws against too many things. There should only be laws against burglary, rape, robbery, homicide, and then let the cops go out there and clean the streets up fighting those four crimes. But, you know, let's get off of the drug war and writing people tickets and the over-policing. I'm scared. You asked the question, you know, what's it going to be like? It's going to get worse in the United States. Law enforcement under Trump. Now, I'm in favor of a lot of Trump's policies. A lot of what he's doing, I love what he's doing, but it's really hard for me to support how he's going to be cracking down on law enforcement. Right now, he's going after violent crime, like in Washington, D.C. Great. Let's get the streets safe. It's safer in the Philippines. It's safer in Mexico, where I am now, than it is in the United States. The United States is a very unsafe place. So let's get the hardcore criminals off the street. But then what are we going to do after that? The police are going to be hungry for more adrenaline, and that's when the abuse is going to unfold. I predict in the next 5 years, we're going to see more excessive use of force cases than we've ever seen in the United States.
Well, that's an interesting statement, considering that we've seen a lot of growth, but now due to, you know, things like body cams and, you know, the internet, people are able to see what's going on with law enforcement. And I think that a lot of it may have been scaled down a little bit for a while because there was this nonstop surveillance. But what we've been learning is that in a lot of times, even though there's a surveillance, law enforcement is still not being held accountable for their actions when they do break the law, right? Badges don't grant extra rights, essentially is the statement and the slogan that a lot of people out there use on the daily. So if we do start going down this very militaristic way, because cops have gotten militarized through the 1033 program, we learned that a lot with the Alex Jones police state videos, police state 1, 2, 3, and 4, talk a lot about Rex 84, which is some of that's being implemented in, you know, the idea of internment camps and military camps being turned into migrant centers where they're going to put people. I think it's kind of worrisome to see that we're slowly starting to go down the slope that people like Alex Jones and William Cooper and other people over the years have warned about. And, you know, what do we do about this migrant problem here in America, Barry?
Yeah, well, the migrant problem just has to be fixed. Listen, I'm a migrant. I've been a migrant for 13 years. 7 months, 14 months, I've been an alien in one country or another. And when I go to the Philippines or Brazil or Mexico, I have to assimilate. I can't, you know, it's illegal for me to do activism in the Philippines. If I do activism in the Philippines, they'll arrest me. It should be like that. Foreigners have no business coming to the United States causing unrest. They need to assimilate into the environment. And right now, what I see, you know, it's a very uncomfortable truth. But what I see are a bunch of brown people and black people from other countries hating America and causing hell in the inner cities. I would like to see that cleaned up.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the government is handling this. And there's a lot of good people, though. And the question is how do you solve it? Because there's people that are contributing to society, have children here, but may not be legal. And should there be an expedited path to citizenship for those individuals? And that's a debate for another time. But I do think it's interesting to see how Trump has decided to go after the illegals. There's a lot of listeners out there in support of that. And I remember talking to you, I think it was a year ago, about you coming to America. And you're like, it's crazy. It's really hard to get into America. You can't get a green card. You were trying to get in, trying to get the kids in as well from you and Mia. And they were not giving you guys access to America. And you're like, I could just walk across the border and no one would have a problem with it. But you're trying to do it the right way and no one's letting you in.
That's true.
Let's talk about that process for a moment.
That's true. First of all, leave our Mexicans alone. I mean, our Mexicans have been coming in and out of the United States. It's not the Mexicans that are the problem. It's the Middle Easterners and the people from Africa. And you're right. I tried to get three of my Filipino kids to the United States and their visas were denied. We're talking about college educated. They're all in their mid-20s. They had money in the bank. They had jobs. And 2 years ago, last year, visas were denied. Visas were denied while millions of, you know, you're talking about, you're right. Families need to be able to assimilate and come into the United States legally. But what I saw were thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of 20 to 30 year old men wearing gold chains and cell phones with no families. Like, where are they coming from? They're not fleeing hard times. There's some kind of operation to flood, I believe, to flood the Western civilizations. And I think Trump stopped that, and I'm glad he did.
Yeah, what you're discussing is the NGOs. You have these United Nations organizations because the CIA has gone and done meddling in other countries and destabilized it. And they're like, oh, what a great idea. We'll just sell them American Dream and we'll ship them up through Mexico into America. And these NGOs, maybe some of it or a lot of it could have been USAID money. We're not quite sure where all that money was going because they say billions of dollars, no earmarks. No idea where that money went. That could have been used for that purpose alone. So these organizations that are trying to cart people in there outside of the United States or United Nations, organizations, a lot of them.
That's right. It's all about culture. They're trying to destroy American culture. And I had no idea how important and how beautiful American culture was until I moved away and learned the Philippine culture, learned the Mexican culture. The United States, their culture leads the world. We make everything trendy and cool. We have rock and roll. We have football. We have Abraham Lincoln. We have all of that, the type of American history. And somebody's trying to erase that by flooding the United States with foreigners to erase American culture. Because if you don't hang on to your culture, you're easy to control. So I'm all for making sure American culture, which is a beautiful culture, you have no idea. A lot of people don't understand how important American culture is because you're living in it. You may not even think about culture, but American culture actually shapes the rest of the world. And I'm so glad to see the Americans fighting back, taking their country back, taking control of their country. Yes, let aliens come in, but let them do it the way I did it into these other countries, assimilate properly, fit in and not stick out.
Yeah, and obviously there's a crime narrative. And not only that, you could have terrorists coming across the border. Nobody cared. And they're probably already here. So just waiting, sleeper cells, who knows? I believe it was Joe Biggs at InfoWars that went across the border and found some interesting things there dealing with terrorist cells. If I remember right, maybe 7 or 8 years ago as a watcher of Alex Jones' show, it's always interesting to see what's going on, Barry. But when we're talking about the United States and cleaning it up, we're seeing a lot of action being taken by ICE. We're seeing migrants, dangerous individuals taken off the streets. And a lot of times the United States seems to overcompensate, overreact, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And there might be some of that going on. But I think that in the hindsight, if we get these dangerous people off the streets that are here causing crimes, that's a big start to fixing the problem here in America. Now, my concern is the same as yours. What is going to happen after this? What are the police going to go to next? Because at the end of the day, a lot of it is revenue generating, right? Is this system that they're going to put in place, these internment camps, are they going to be used for American citizens maybe in the future? I'm a little concerned because I see the way the police state is going, the surveillance state. They have citizen threat scores now, Barry, that the AI algorithm, they check your purchases, what you do on the internet, wherever you go, it tracks you on the Google Maps. They know who you interact with, who you talk to, who you conversate with on Facebook. I had a guy I interviewed years back, Blaine Cooper, who deleted his Facebook messages. He was a sheriff's kid, but when the police brought him in, they had all his deleted messages. Once it's on the internet, it seems to live forever. Things are getting predatory with the whole idea of surveillance. And when we look at Palantir and some of these things, we now have the left buying in and going, well, Big Brother maybe isn't such a good thing. Remember when liberals were like, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about. I'm like, it's good. It's about time you guys caught up with us. There's a problem with surveillance in the United States. We gotta address that, Barry. And law enforcement is at the cutting edge of it because they have all these license plate readers, these scanners, these fusion centers where they collect all this metadata on you. And that tells them whether to do a no-knock raid or they come down, break your door blazing. Nowadays, even if you get like a trespassing ticket, yeah, they'll do that. Look at January 6th. people I talked to and interviewed who had trespassing tickets had cops break down their front door, throw them on the ground, put a gun in front of their head, in front of their kids, all because they walked around the Capitol building. In some cases, the cops opened the door for them.
Well, everything's being recorded. Literally everything, everything, whether you've got a phone near you or not, I can't prove it, but I totally believe that the satellites Elon blanketed the earth with, if they can zoom in on me right now, what I'm doing, and they can record the entire earth's surface. I've been saying for 10 years that anything you say online, any keystroke you make, no matter how many VPNs, no matter how much you think it's encrypted, it's all hacked. It's absolutely impossible to not be seen nowadays. So what's the answer? Well, the answer is, one, be a good person, and let's hope this surveillance society turns on the real criminals, the pedophiles sitting up there in Washington, D.C., the pedophiles in these other countries that sort of own the earth among the elites. I hope the surveillance eventually somehow flips on them and we get to see exactly what they're doing. They're the real criminals, not us.
Well, we saw that a lot as a key reporter in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. There's a lot of conversation about the names drop, which were like Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Stephen Hawking, and there's a plethora of other individuals. And if anyone wants to see that, they can go to the rundownlive.com. I have the stenographer's witness testimonies published, including the FBI's witness testimonies. Obviously, there was an extortion ring going on, and now they seem to have lost the client list, which it makes me wonder if the CIA was involved and they don't want to say, hey, we were involved in this extortion operation, kind of like the Finders cult. If you guys remember in the 80s and 90s, they had the Finders cult, and the cop that was involved with that came out and said that the CIA kind of whitewashed that and kind of cleaned it up, and that it might have been a government situation, a government operation. Is that the reason why the Epstein list is not being released? And I'm going to tell you, I would not be surprised if in 20 years from now we find out our government had their hand in that. And what is Trump's narrative? What was his involvement? I mean, you know, he was listed to going to Little St. James one time, and he was on the plane several times. And a lot of people say he borrowed it or not. We just don't know. We don't know all the facts. But somebody does if they have the ability to surveil the whole world. That being said, I have to mention Samsung is doing exactly what you're saying. They're making a virtual world, a virtual version of the entire earth where they can implement, different strategies to see the outcomes so they have a better decision-making process. So basically they're going to make an exact replica of our planet in real time, as close to real time as they can. And you'll be able to go in that virtual world and test things out potentially in the future. They literally wrote a whole paper on this, and Samsung wants to do this. So we're not far from what you're talking about there, Barry. They even show it in movies now and conditioning it. They call it God's Eye technology or Eye of God. I remember in, the second Batman put out by, trying to remember which one that was with Heath Ledger. They show where Batman types in and it tells him exactly where the Joker is. He can zoom in on the second floor of the building. And they also use it in a Fast and Furious movie. They call it God's Eye technology. They type into Social Security, follows you everywhere you go, listens in on everything. And it's not long and it's not too far fetched. All they need is some robots and cams with Stingray technology built right in. They can listen to all your conversations, what you say, what you do. And, you know, we already carry around a cell phone everywhere you go where they can do this, Barry. We have a minute here before break, but what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I've got a lot to say about that. The Epstein thing we'll never see, but here's a question that I asked the Cigar Club last Monday. I asked, what if releasing the Epstein files would cause a world war, would you still do it? I don't think Trump is hiding the Epstein files because he's a pedophile. I don't think he's a pedophile. But I think there's a lot of people who are, and somehow it could cause world unrest is why I think they're holding back the list. But, you know, when it comes to pedophilia, all the cards should be laid on the table and let the justice hammer fall wherever it may fall.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. We're going to be heading to commercial break here in just a moment, but I think January 6th is a idea of how people might react, because a lot of it was based off of a faulty conspiracy dealing with QAnon, And that was basically, in my opinion, a big Pentagon honeypot. The guy that took some credit for that, his name was DeFango, a hacker, Emmanuel Chavez III. And a lot of people believed it was there to identify extremists. What would happen? What would happen if this list came out? People might get upset. We'll be back with Barry Cooper on the American Journal.
Right now, for only 7 days, we're having the biggest sale in the history of the AlexJonesStore.com. About to break it all down right now. For 1 week only, we have launched the biggest sale ever on collectible bullion, silver coins, and our amazing collectible knives at thealexjonesstore.com. The sale is Blades and Bullion Super Sale. Now, ladies and gentlemen, despite the fact that we're about to sell out of the remaining collectible coins that are limited edition, they'll never be made again, and our incredible World War II updated Spartan trench knife with the skull crusher and the brass knuckles and the 10-inch stainless steel razor-sharp double-edged blade, and this incredible 6-inch battle dagger, despite the fact they're selling out, we are offering all of these products at up to 40% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if I went into a knife shop and I saw these knives for this price and they weren't even inscribed with 1776 or Tip of the Spear or InfoWars, I would still get them because I'm a knife aficionado and I know the best. And the reason that is because these are the knives I love. These are the knives I think are the best. It took us over a year to get a supplier at a decent price with high quality for this bad boy right here. And it's selling out quick. Got an amazing inscription, Tip of the Spear with the Spartan. On the other side, InfoWars, a true piece of history with the high-tech scabbard sheath that hooks on your belt. Simply amazing. Now look at this bad boy. It goes great in your purse, great in your car, right on your side. High-tech sheath. Doesn't come out, but easily, there's a fallout, but easily pulls out. This won't run out of bullets. This will defend you and your family. It's grabbing 1776 on one side, collectible, limited edition, Alex Jones signature on the other side. And it comes with this collectible gift case. Makes an amazing gift as well. And then, as I was mentioning, look at these coins. There are only a few hundred left of each one of these. Only 5,000 were made of each. You've got, due to popular demand, Alex Jones on one side, InfoWars on the other. Then you've got one of my favorites, Paul Revere, his Midnight Ride, Our Lives, Our Fortune, and Our Honor, Declaration of Independence on the other. Then you've got the Tip of the Spear Spartan helmet and the Gadsden flag snake with the spear through the middle, Tip of the Spear. And then this one, they hold back only a few hundred of these. Even though these were available anymore, Trump, fight, 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 battle for the Republic, commemorating President Trump. All four of these coins are about to sell out. You can get them discounted individually or even bigger discount when you get all four together. Right now, part of the Blades and Bullion Super Sale. These are collectible. These are great prices. This knife right here sells for $100 in stores. We bought 5,000 of them. They're almost sold out. But I'm selling to you for $78, and it funds the operation. Same thing with this. This knife sells all day for $150 in stores. We bought a whole bunch of them. So it's massively discounted to you. And you talk about defending yourself and your family, this is it. And you're also funding the Tip of the Spear in the information war while you do this, so you cannot lose. The only way you fail is not taking action at thealexjonesstore.com. And while you're there, get the Ultra Breath and Link Blue, get the very best Irish Sea Moss, the very best Shilajit, the very best turmeric. It's all there, and it funds this operation. I cannot do this without you. I try to bring you really cool things that I think are amazing, the best supplements, you name it. So you buy it, you get it, you love it, it empowers you, and you're happy with what you did, and you continue to support us. I want a long-term relationship with you. I want to thank those who have supported the broadcast. I want to encourage those of you who have been on the fence to take action now, get amazing products, and keep us on the air, be part of history. Thank you so much.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Kristan T. Harris. Watch it live right now at band.video. We'll be right back.
Never Get Busted is making waves across America. The star of the documentary is joining us, Barry Cooper, here. We've been diving in deep about the police state. The Medium had a great article talking about the experience. If you guys want to see a little bit about that, check out the article about I attended the Hollywood premiere of Barry Cooper's Never Get Busted. There's some live footage of Barry there I have as well. It's pretty interesting. But that being said, Barry Cooper, thank you for joining us here. And we're having some great conversation about the police state. And there's a lot of advancement here with the police state. There's an article by Vice that just came out not too long ago, and they're using people's DNA to generate 3D images of suspects that they've never seen before, Barry. So what they're doing is they're taking DNA that they have, they put it in this analyzer, and it spits out an image of the person. And they're saying it can be upwards of sometimes as 80% accurate. And to me, I ask, you know, how is that even legal? Like the old-fashioned police officer in you has to have a different way of handling things, right? How does that, and I don't even know if that would stand up in court, but it gives them an idea of what people look like, Barry. And this is the newer technology that's out there. And basically, if they have your DNA, they're just going to make 3D images of you now. You're going to have an avatar out there. And how do they know their hair color, the tattoos or anything like that, their height? I find it interesting. And how much information can they find out from DNA? I'm not sure, but I thought you being a former top narcotics police officer, you know a little bit about DNA and how this process works.
Yeah, well, it's predictive policing, just like when you're typing a sentence in on your phone and the robots figure out what they think you're going to type next and they fill in the blanks for you. Well, that's what they're doing on a mass scale. That's why data is so important. In fact, the elites aren't looking for money anymore. They're looking for data. Whoever has the most data wins. Why? Because this data they can feed into these really smart robots, and robots spot patterns and loops. And let's just say they spotted a certain pattern or loop of somebody that's going to burglarize a home. Like right before somebody burglarizes, they do something. Say 90% of the people who are going to burglarize a home does something, even if their heart rate increases and their blood pressure goes up and a couple of six or seven different things that makes that person likely to suspect or predict they're going to commit a crime. And they're a lot further in this technology than we realize, because I've noticed just as an older man, 57 years old, everything's a loop. Haven't you noticed? Like, I've been through this before. I've seen this before. Like the Gaza-Israel war, I saw that before. That's not the first war I've seen them fight. Everything seems to be a loop. So this predictive policing takes advantage of that. I personally think they've got quantum computing right now. Anytime, like you said, Samsung is coming out with a fake globe where people can see down and zoom in. That means they've already got that technology. Whatever technology they release to us, like ChatGPT and Grok, has been around for a decade, and they've been using that on us. I think a lot of the TV scripts, I think a lot of the Fox and CNN news channels were all written by ChatGPT before ChatGPT ever came out.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned pre-crime and policing, because there's a whole narrative of where things go. We just talked about just using DNA to develop a avatar of an individual so you can go after them and identify them and potentially arrest them. But what happens when they arrest the wrong person? There's all these questions. And you're right. There are trends. There are behaviors. They call them social credit scores in China, and citizen threat scores are the predecessor to that. And I'm a little concerned. I mean, I want a safe neighborhood, Barry. I do. I also don't want a cop, pesking me if I'm back in the alley getting out of my car because there's some kind of curfew in line or something like that. Don't give away my freedom for liberty, because, I'll lose both here, and the cops are going to put you in jail. And I'm not saying all cops are bad. Like, right, there's definitely people out there that are, working to try to keep the local neighborhood safe. And there are the ones that, like, you've busted and you've set up that are corrupt, and they're getting away with things that police all over the country do, like asset forfeiture is another one where a lot of people are very passionate about. I talked to one cop. I asked him, well, what happened to all the video games kids stole back in the day when they confiscated for evidence at a Walmart or a Toys R Us, which, you know, Toys R Us isn't around. Just kind of dating myself here, Barry. But they would say, oh, I give them, they come and they take them out of evidence. And they give them to their kids for Christmas. Like that's what they do. I talked to them and that happens. That's something small. That's a small level of, you know, what I consider police corruption, but citizen threat scores, you know, they're starting to find out what you shop, what you buy, what you do with it. You might have bought an aquaponics and thought 9/11 was an inside job and you're having a garden. And before you know it, they're knocking on your door with a fake warrant that they got because they got somebody to claim that they saw something inside your house and they've never been in there. And they'll come breaking down your door to find out you're growing strawberries in your house. It's just wild to me. And I think that a lot of this data that they're getting is, like you mentioned, it's just data. It's there. It's useless data, a lot of it, because what can you do with it? You don't really know, but they make these bad leaps and bounds that there's a percentage that it might be this, and they get innocent people a lot of times in these situations. So it's kind of scary, especially with Stingray's technology. We talked about that as well, where they can tap into your cell phone conversations and listen into what you say. Get your text sent right to the SWAT car with what they call as a cell phone site simulator. I actually talked to a guy from a company that's what they do. And I'm like, really? And I'm like, well, what's to prevent a cop from listening in to his girlfriend and what she's saying to other dudes or other people? And I'm sure that's happened as well. Cops using it to listen in and spy on their loved ones.
What if robots do a better job, though? Because mankind has done a horrible job with policing. We've over-policed the Americans to where almost everybody has PTSD when they see a cop. What if the robot gets better at policing, though? Let's just say the robot doesn't make mistakes. For instance, like a judge has discretion. Cops have discretion, and they abuse that discretion a lot. But what if we entered the facts of a case into some kind of AI, and the AI was the judge, whether a person was guilty or not guilty? What if AI got so good, it actually could predict who's going to murder somebody? Let's just pretend it gets that good. I'm all for that. Now, I'm not for the widespread of what AI is able to do, but that's where we need to get the laws codified before AI starts doing these things. We need to get the laws and figure out what should be illegal and what shouldn't be illegal. Possessing a small amount of cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, cannabis should not be illegal. It should also not be illegal to not use your turn signal. We need to get rid of these kind of things. If we get rid of bad laws, then I don't think we'll be as scared of robot policing as we should be now.
Well, the question is what do you do with these people who are, you know, partaking in these drugs? Do they need rehabilitation? I think a lot of people don't realize when people go to jail for those kind of crimes, they just learn how to do real crimes. It's college for criminals, per se. And when they come out, they're much worse off than they were when they first went in. So the real answer is rehabilitation. I know if somebody said, they legalized heroin, I'm not going to go out there and do heroin. Is there somebody out there that might be an addict? Absolutely. I would say Big Pharma causes a lot of addicts, and they're just legal drug dealers out there. There's a pharmacist in every pharmacist, we used to say. Big Pharma. Just take the P out, right? There's a harm in pharma. So a lot of people may have not heard that, but that's a saying that's been going around for years. And it's a revolutionary act. I remember in church, one of the ladies was talking about those evil marijuana users, and she was popping an Oxycontin for her back. And it's like, who's the judge on this? Like, and there's like a moral ethics on it. And the big issue is I don't think that the government has a right to tell you what to put in your body. Yeah, and that goes into like medical procedures. If there's an experimental procedure to cure cancer or a disease, people should have the right to explore those options if they so choose, right? And that's where we got to go with this.
I fully agree. And people go, well, what if we make all that legal? What do we do if somebody high robs somebody? Well, you put them in jail for robbery. See, we're not cracking down hard enough on violent crime, and we're spending too much of our energy and money and use of force and jails for things that shouldn't be crimes. Literally, millions of arrests happen each year where people violated what shouldn't be against the law. And that's the problem. Defund the police. Get more police. What should we do? Robotic police. But the first thing we got to do is get all these damn laws off the book and make it where it's legal to go out and have a beer and smoke a cigarette if you want, as long as you're not harming somebody else. It should not be illegal. So we have to do a complete overhaul. And I've given this a considerable amount of thought, a lot of thought on what needs to happen in the United States to end this war. The police are so horrible there. I don't feel safe I feel safe here in Mexico because I know the police aren't going to raid my house. Did you know the police don't raid houses in Mexico? Whereas in the United States, they raid 50,000 homes per year. That's 300 raids per day. They don't do that in Mexico. They don't do that in Philippines. The only times you'll see a home get raided like in Mexico or in the Philippines is if it's like a government official or a cartel boss that went crazy and they've got to go in that house and get him. But cops absolutely won't come into your house in Mexico. It needs to be like that in the United States. I see cops on videos all the time in the United States just because the neighbor called and the husband and wife are arguing and yelling. The cops breach the door, actually kick the door in just to make sure the woman is not harmed. That's crazy. If a husband and wife are fighting inside, they should be allowed to fight. If the woman or the man's getting the hell beat out of them, they can run out of the door and call the police themselves. There's very few instances of actual kidnappings where the husband's holding the woman, not letting the woman leave. But when the woman finally does get away in 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 days, she can go file kidnapping on him. But cops need to stay out of our homes. They have way too much power to get involved in our lives, which, you know, we hear about military policing, Kristen, and this is going to blow you away. I think the police should be more like military. I think the police should be more like the police here in Mexico, where they sit on the corner in trucks with machine guns and they leave everybody alone. They don't bother you. They don't talk to you. They don't pick up your newspaper. They don't help walk you across the street. They don't settle arguments between you and your wife. They don't bother you if you got a joint in your pocket. They sit there like military. And when they're dispatched, it's to a robbery or a burglary or a fight where they show up with intense force and arrest whoever is being violent and put them in jail. That's why there's no crime here. That's why there's no crime here. This community policing bullshit needs to be thrown out the window. I don't want cops community policing. I don't want cops driving around in my community. I don't want to know the cop's name that's in my precinct. It's unnecessary. Police need to stay at the police station or stay on a corner until they're called to a crime. Out patrolling around looking for people to arrest and write tickets is totally unnecessary, and it's what's caused the great divide between the American people and the American police.
Well, one of the nice things about the United States is posse comitatus. We don't have soldiers in the United States because every American has a gun. We're technically militia in case there's an invasion. And, you know, I get it. The law enforcement already looks like military, and we're seeing what they're doing. So I'm pushing back on that a little bit, Barry. I don't agree with you entirely, but I understand what you mean by being non-interventionalist, like not getting involved in people's lives. That's the moral of the story here is if cops stayed at a police station and came when they called, when you called, they'd be a service to the community. And what a lot of people don't know is 98% of crimes aren't stopped in the act of a criminal convicting them or committing them.
How can I say that? How can I say that better instead of saying I'm for militarized police? How can I reframe that to get my point across where it doesn't sound like I want the U.S. military policing people? It's the non-interventionist thing. That's the point I'm trying to get across. I appreciate that. I'm going to start using that term.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Barry. And it's one of those things where I got to ask, if you give the cops like military equipment, it escalates things. And I'm about de-escalation because what happens is you got cops in armor.
That's not true. If you give these American police who are undertrained and picked from because of egos, then you're going to have that problem. But you don't have that problem here in Mexico. The Mexican police here are militarized. And they're not using the extra guns to hurt other people. It's all attitude. It's all training. And it's all in who you who you hire and what you allow your police to do. Mexican police aren't allowed to stop you and search your backpacks. They're not allowed to bust in your door because your wife and you are arguing. They don't allow that. They'll go to jail. They'll get in trouble if they do those things. So if you put those same restrictions on the Americans, I don't know. I just have this picture of police with machine guns sitting on the corners in New York and Chicago and these cities. And then when there's a gang-related shooting, they go in there and shoot them up and end that. There's no crime here. That's what I'm trying to get across. There's not 30 homicides or 30 shootings per night here in Mexico. And it's the way they police their societies. And part of it is not being a non-interventionist. I love that term.
Yeah, I think it's important. I was more referring to the escalation by people who want to then commit crimes, that the cops start wearing like military gear. Then all of a sudden the criminals become more militarized. And there's a lot of excuses now to give cops drones. Oh, the bad guys are getting drones. Gangs are getting drones. Everyone's getting drones. And now they want to get cops drones. And then they originally said, well, drones will not be weaponized. Now we're seeing drones weaponized. Some states have weaponized drones. The culture here is a little different than Mexico. I believe that full-heartedly. And we also have a very different past than Mexico. But I think we can agree that on the same thing, that we want non-interventionalism by our cops. We don't want them to intervene unless we ask them to, or we ask them to get involved.
Well, the culture is different, but there's still, I go and watch people eat and go to the beach and go to clubs and raise their kids and have picnics and go for walks here in the United States. That's everything Americans do. So we're all humans. And I'm telling you, okay, what's crazy is to keep what's going on in the United States. The way they police their people has failed. They need to learn how the Mexican police and how the Philippine police their people. And it's more of a non-intervention, like you said. They don't get involved in people's lives. They're only called to violent crime. That's why when I see a cop here, I don't, oh my God. But when I see red and blues in the United States, I start racing because they'll stop you for anything. And it's horrible. It's traumatic. We need to learn from some of our foreign neighbors. American policing, we all know, has just gone out of control. And the answer is first starting off with erasing some of these laws where cops don't have the right to pull you over, shake you down, stop you on your way to work, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, all that revenue generating, they're just, that's where we see a lot of the issues and confrontations and, you know, people getting shot a lot of times is in routine stops. A lot of times they were completely unnecessary. And it's interesting, Barry, you know, there's all this new tech. They're now getting into mind reading tech, which I think is going to be, the predecessor to a Minority Report. Like, well, how long will it be till you commit more thought crimes? We already got thought crimes. How long until you commit a thought crime? You think about doing things. How many times have you thought about doing something and then you didn't do it because you debated in your mind the ethics and morality behind your decision and the repercussions, Barry? Thought crimes, mind reading devices. Facebook is already reading your mind. That's how they a lot of times will know how to advertise to you. As you mentioned, metadata is a big deal, Barry. And I can't agree with you more as well on the subject that law enforcement is very predatory. But at the same time, why is it that we are having all these crimes and all these issues? A lot of it stems back to what we have happening locally. It's the breakdown of the family. There's so many aspects to this of what's going on in America. Mom and dad don't stay home with their kids. Kids don't get homework anymore. It's a competitive advantage if your kid gets homework, because then your parents are saying, well, you're being educated poorly or something wrong. That's not how I learned, right? Whatever it might be. And I think there's a larger scale of the intentional dumbing down of the American population by these multinational corporatists, the people that have gotten the education, and we're creating a lot of these criminals. You know, the Freeway Rick Ross story, Iran-Contra, a lot of the things I know that you're very well educated on. Our government is responsible a lot of times for bringing in the drugs, and we're putting people in jail for the drugs that their government is selling on the streets or bringing on the streets. You know, fentanyl is a big deal. And I think that if a lot of this stuff was legalized, there wouldn't be things like fentanyl and drugs, and maybe we would save more lives in the end game. But policing in the future with robots, AI judges, like you mentioned. They already have AI lawyers, if you didn't know that out there. AI lawyers are helping people get out of tickets left and right. And I think there is a revenue issue going on with law enforcement. Yeah, absolutely good, Barry. So what's your take in the future of policing? What are some of the major changes you would like to see in America as far as, let's say, a reform? Because right now the president is trying everything in his power to help with crime in D.C. There's rumor that he might expand this to other cities where he doesn't have federal jurisdiction, and it's outside, I believe. I guess you'd have to have a constitutional expert on the program to talk about it. I'm not quite sure what the repercussions are of bringing in the military across the United States, but what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I don't think you and I, even though we know what changes need to be made, we're just lowly trailer park boys, and they're not going to let us end the drug war. So that's what I love about my brand, Never Get Busted. It's realized, and I've grown to realize, that I'm probably not going to end the drug war, probably not going to be able to change things. So what I've done the last 17 years, and I'm going to continue doing, is teach American citizens how to go around the laws, how to go around law enforcement, how not to get busted. And it really is knowledge and information. If you've got the right information here, the chances of you getting arrested in the United States decreases. Like, we got Tiffany now. You mentioned her. She's blogging for Never Get Busted. You really need to go over there, nevergetbusted.com, my YouTube channel. Tip after tip after tip. I've even adopted some of the tips that, you know, Kristen, when you would message me and say, hey, there's this new kind of technology. Man, I put that on a blog somewhere. So I have decided to not worry so much about ending the drug war, because they're not going to let that happen. And I really, really want to focus on teaching Americans how to get around and how to be elusive, how to go around the cops instead of through the cops. Like, one of my favorite tips now is that if the cops can't see you, they can't arrest you. If they can't see you, they cannot arrest you. It's impossible to be arrested if cops don't see you. So stay out of their sight. No matter what you're doing, don't ever let them see you. If they knock on your door, don't let them see you. I used to teach, go to a window and say, what do you want? And talk to them through a window. Nope, the cop can see you. And things have changed since then. He can claim that he heard something going on in your house, that you were getting rid of evidence, and he kicks the door in. So you hide. If a cop knocks on your door in the United States, you sit there and don't move. Don't open the door. After the cop leaves, then you call the police department and say, hey, my neighbor just told me there was a cop at my door. What do y'all want? If they can't see you, they cannot arrest you.
Barry Cooper, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's always great to catch up with you. I know we talk almost on the daily, and I know you're doing some good things. Where can everyone see your documentary? I know there's some stuff in a limbo right now with it. But your documentary is definitely making waves. People are giving it great reviews. We have a minute here. Let people know where they can find your show as well.
It really is one of the best documentaries of the decade, is what other people are saying. It's winning best documentary awards. It's already got tied up in a federal suit in Australia. When something's good, there's going to be a lot of bullshit that comes behind it. So it's got all the ingredients of a good show. You're going to have to wait until a streamer buys it. Right now, it's in the film festival circuit, going from film festival to film festival to film festival, winning awards. That will cause Netflix, HBO, one of the bigger streamers, to pay what the production company thinks they deserve. And then you'll see it. I predict within the next year, you'll see it streaming somewhere on one of the big streamers.
Barry Cooper, thanks. As always, it's an honor to talk to you and get your viewpoint on things. Thanks for joining the American Journal. Up next, guys, we have Clyde Lewis joining us from Ground Zero. Make sure that you guys don't go anywhere. It's going to be an interesting conversation with Clyde. We're going to dive into a whole bunch of things, including robots. They got a robot fight club going on. I always wanted to fight robots. We're going to dive into surveillance and police state, amongst many other things, with Clyde Lewis.
We need
funds, we're fighting the globalists at point blank range. And they got a receivership hearing with Judge Guerra Gamble that ran the Texas show trial next week to send the sheriffs here. I get it could be within days next Wednesday to shut us down. And I'm sure we'll get lots of funds then once we're shut down. Be like, oh God, he really did need help. Oh yeah. We have been battling and barely surviving. They turned the internet off here before. They had a fake sale to Bloomberg's front group. Remember all that? And it was because we didn't give up and the crew didn't give up. When I told the crew, no, we're going to beat this, don't go. And I stayed here and slept here a couple times. We're still here. And because you bought the products, we had enough money for lawyers to go battle it and beat it. Everybody listening needs to get off the fence, get off the bench, get up at the plate, and needs to go become a VIP. $30 a month. See it as a donation. You get $40 each month to spend in the store. Sales on top of everything. Special deals. Special offers just to you. It's insane. And then if you really just want to support and you don't want methylene blue or turmeric, you're crazy if you don't, or Ultimate Life Force, the best cardiovascular spike protein detox, everybody should be taking it. I mean, it's the best. Ultimate Life Force is the best cardiovascular, heart health, spike protein detoxer. Every man, woman, and child should take at least one regimen of it, see how you feel. It does dramatic things. We have the strongest turmeric. You should get it. And I got a lot of news to cover. I won't sit here and beat a dead horse, but the news we get out is so powerful, and it's that less than 1% of people that buy stuff at theauctionstore.com that make all this possible. And this fight is your fight. They want us off the air because they want to shut down focal points of organizations that hold the Trump administration's feet to the fire and warn Trump and warn his advisors and have a big effect and big pull, as the administrations have said and as the Democrats have said. They've come after Trump. They've sued Trump. They've had their operatives in there, and they see our stuff everywhere. Step into the zone of history and understand that you are the key. You are the variable. You are the Paul Revere's. You are the resistance. And this dog don't hunt without you.
American Journal. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris, filling in for the noble Harrison Smith. And if you guys want to support this broadcast, you guys need to head on down to the AlexJonesStore.com, where we have the greatest and best supplements that you guys can get. Support this broadcast. We have up to 50% off going on at the store right now. Make sure you guys run down there, grab your little cell phone or tablet or computer or wherever you're at. Check out the store. Get some Ultra Methylene Blue. You know, 50% off, that's a heck of a deal. And I got to tell you, Jones has some of the best supplements. I've been taking them for years. Everything from Survival Shield to some of his beet extracts. It's phenomenal. And it really gets you going. A lot of these supplements are very beneficial. You either pay now or you pay later with hospital bills. Why not treat your body good? It's your temple. The temple of God right there. You know, that's got to take care of the temple and treat your body good. Get the nutraceuticals, get the energy, get the vitamins, go there, pick up something, support us, the AlexJonesStore.com. Our next guest that will be joining us really needs no introduction. I had a chance to meet him on several occasions, and he's been a big voice of liberty and has a very growing radio program. Clyde Lewis is an interesting individual. I got to tell you guys, whenever I join Clyde on the show, it's always an interesting conversation. And when I asked him to come on, there were so many different topics to talk about and really dive into. He does, he dives into like government conspiracies and, you know, different science aspects of things. Clyde Lewis, welcome to the broadcast. I'm really excited to have you on. A lot of people don't know you're the voice of the Toxic Avenger in those old school Lloyd Kaufman shows. Was it Troma Films? That's actually Trey Parker and Matt Stone from South Park. Some of their early movies were Troma flicks. And it's great to see you and have you on the broadcast today, Clyde. Thank you for joining us.
You can't forget about my friend James Gunn, too. I mean, he was the guy that apparently, you know, he's directing all these great superhero movies now in DC. And he's the new DC guy for Superman and Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it's just amazing what he's done in his career. So I worked with him on the Toxic Avenger back then. So yeah, I mean, James Gunn, Trey Parker, Matt Stone, I had a chance to meet them before they were Trey Parker and Matt Stone, actually. So that was kind of nice. It was nice.
Yeah, they had, what was it, Cannibal the Musical, which was a hilarious, movie that they came out with. They came out with a couple other ones. Of course, Basketball is the one that everyone knows, here, Clyde. And it's just interesting because, you know, pop comedy, comedy is a great way to reach individuals and the truth. And you do it very well. You have a lot of interesting information on your broadcast, as always. And I think it's interesting to hear about, the pop culture aspect of things that you cover a lot of times on your broadcast, the things that people are into and, relate it and bring the truth full circle. People really work through different forms of entertainment. I think that's why the elite really took over Hollywood, because people like to be conditioned. They like to be programmed. That's why they call them television programs. If you're a listener out there, you're constantly being programmed. Even our letters are all symbols and vibrations. Look at the letter, the capital A. It's a pyramid and all-seeing eye. They're getting that epigenetic memories to go and flow through you so that you can be programmed more easily. That's why our language was used and chosen for its purpose. The symbols were chosen for certain purposes. You're easier to program. And it's very interesting out there. So I have to ask you guys, while we're running past this first commercial break here, are you an easily programmed individual? Do you have an original thought, or do you think for yourself? Because a lot of people out there, I doubt that they have an original thought in their mind at any point throughout the day. They see the golden arches, they have to go get the nuggets. They don't think about what they could cook at home. They're told something, or they see a title. They're an echo chamber. Do you challenge your cognitive dissonance? Do you challenge your logical fallacies? It's an interesting thought, and I want you guys to think about that while we head to commercial break. But when we come back, Clyde Lewis and I are going to break down a bunch of different topics that are raging right now in the news. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Make sure you guys check out thealexjonesstore.com and support this broadcast.
Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at thealexjonesstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Kriston T. Harris. Watch it live right now at fans.video.
Military bases are being converted into internment camps, just like in Rex 84, and basically how Alex Jones predicted. William Cooper predicted this as well. But Alex Jones is the most notable because he came out with those amazing documentary series, Police State 1, 2, 3, and 4. And our guest here is Clyde Lewis, host of Ground Zero I was at Milwaukee, Oregon, which is funny because I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Clyde here is in a different neck of the woods in the same city, spelled slightly differently here. But what's your thought on what's going on with these internment camps and the way the government is handling cleaning up the streets across America? It's a very interesting subject, and people have different thoughts on it. And I know there's a very tribal aspect of things, right? You got the conservatives who want to support their leader, and you have the liberals who always hate them, and vice versa. They kind of flip sides sometimes. It's like when the liberals finally realize that the surveillance state was bad, right? If you're not doing anything wrong, you got nothing to worry about. And then all of a sudden Pelletier comes around, and all of a sudden there's a whole lot to worry about, but the surveillance has been going on all along. And it's great that we can get the liberals on board, but conservatives shouldn't be defending the surveillance state all of a sudden. I think there's some interest in what's going on, especially with fusion centers, analytics and data and surveillance and the way it's going to get expanded under this administration. As there's things I love about just about every administration, there's things that concern me. And some of the things that have been coming out of D.C. have started to concern me and started to have me question what's really going on, including the release of the Epstein client list, which is a whole nother, topic we can get into. But let's start here. Rex 84, turning military bases into internment camps. What are your thoughts on that, Clyde?
Well, that was the thing I brought up the other night when I was on the show. I mean, you mentioned Alex Jones, and he put out a lot of great videos. I remember back, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, put out a lot of great videos about the police state takeover. I remember interviewing Jack McLamb long before that, who was a police officer from Arizona, who was he basically patterned out how it would be done, and he spoke of the immigration excuse, and then he said it's going to go from immigration to rounding up people off the streets that are homeless and are drug users, and then it's going to move into citizenry because of the fact that they're going to be monitoring us and they're going to have a social credit situation. And if you don't behave the way you're supposed to behave, there are a number of things they can do to you. They can halt your paychecks. They can, take you to these camps where they re-educate you, or and this is something they did in the Soviet Union. This is something that, you know, when they based any type of philosophies against the government as being mentally ill, being domestic terrorists. And this is the thing we have to worry about with this slippery slope, is that for a long time, we were all yelling and screaming about FEMA camps. We're all yelling and screaming about FEMA coffins. Well, now the FEMA camps are here. They're just being called something else. And they're opening up facilities that are like the Speedway Slammer. They're going to be opening up in Indianapolis, and they hate that name. It's like Alligator Alcatraz. But see, it's like we're creating our own torturous, gimmicky types of prisons to make them all sound fun and marketable. But the truth is they are FEMA camps. The truth is they are going to round up citizens, and some of them are going to be rounded up. And they're going to know why they're being rounded up. And it's a warning that was given by me. It was a warning given by Jack McLamb. It was a warning given during the militias of the Clinton administration. It was always said, you know, like you said, REX84 was a Reagan program. It was first about the idea that if there was an influx of illegals, they'd be placed in those camps. It was also Cloverleaf, which was something that not very many people know about. There was also Jade Helm, where a lot of people had their ideas of what Jade Helm was about. Jade Helm was about patrolling neighborhoods and zeroing in on what we'd call militia leaders, or people who would rise up against the government. And so, yeah, these programs have been in the background. They're just basically being put out there. And even if it wasn't Trump in office, these things would be put out there. One of the things I thought was hilarious was that when we were stuck here in Oregon with our, what we call the color revolution, where people were rioting in the streets every night, it seemed like, and they were destroying property, I made mention of the fact that I think that Trump should call in the National Guard and arrest the governor and arrest the mayor. And, I thought, but that would make him look like a dictator, martial law. And now, of course, now he's doing it to LA, Chicago, New York. Is going to be doing it to all those cities. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, I don't know if you really need to do this, but this is as far as you get before you turn it into martial law. And a lot of people say, well, we need martial law in this country. No, you don't need martial law in this country. I lived in South America during the Dirty War, and they were under martial law every day. And even though you can go about your business and sip your coffee and espresso in the coffee kiosk, and you can go to work every day, but there are also things that happen where you go down the street a few blocks, there's a bomb that goes off. You go down the street a few blocks, and there's a riot happening, and you have to avoid those things. You have to plan your day around riots, plan your day around terrorist activities. You know, all these things happen during a police state, whether or not the police are going to be having a tete-a-tete with the military, and you got to be aware of that. They report on the news, you have to be on your toes, because you could be caught in the middle of a firefight and die in friendly fire, and this is where the United States is not, we're not used to that. We're not used to that kind of country or world. And this is what you see in other countries. We don't see it in the United States. And so now here we are in the dystopia that Alex and others came up with or thought about years ago. And now here we are. And I don't hear much of a peep of anyone saying, you know, this is wrong. In fact, they're saying, well, those thugs on the street need to be taken care of. Well, they're not all thugs on the street. I mean, it's a cover. They give you, just like they did with COVID. Oh, it's for the health of the nation. It's for the betterment of the people. Well, yeah, we don't want illegals in this country. We don't want people abusing our system. And yeah, they need to be rounded up and they need to be shown the door if they're criminals. And if they're illegals, they're criminals. But then we extend it to now saying that people who are homeless or people who are what they determine to be mentally ill or a drug user, they wind up being behind these cages and these places where they're locking people up. And those are the FEMA camps. Those are what we called the FEMA camps back in the day.
Well, my concern, there's a couple different points here that I'd like to make. First is I think it gives buy-in to these leftist extremist groups that want to look for a reason to commit violence. These Antifa cells that are like, well, see, this is what we've been talking about. This is it. This is the dictatorship. This is the fascist regime that we've been warning about and talking about. Now it's time to get even more radicalized. And then we start leading down to this road where we got more extremism and more things like you mentioned, like bombs going off, which I really hope doesn't happen, especially, I mean, I don't like it when the government bombs the other places. I'd hate for bombs to be going off down the road when I'm going to get a frosty beverage or a soda or groceries or taking the kids down to the park. No one wants to see that. And I think that there's something to be said about escalation and the fact that you're giving reasons for the left and extremists of the left to become bad actors and kind of try to portray themselves as some kind of leftist hero. I don't support this ideology. I don't support violence. I'm a non-interventionist. I come from the school of Ron Paul, which, by the way, Ron Paul just had his 90th birthday party. I was at it. It's pretty cool. What would Ron Paul do? I mean, that's the question here. Like, in this kind of situation, how would we handle these internment camps? And it's weird because it's something straight out of David Crowley's Gray State. It's something almost straight out of those old Christian horror movies they had in the 70s, The Image of the Beast and A Distant Thunder. And like, it's a slippery slope. Where does this go? Where it's a slippery slope where we have to ask, how do we want to treat human beings and how are we going to handle this? And now you're right. The homeless issue is growing and it's being mentioned. And how are they going to come up with a solution with the homeless that they get off the streets? Is this how we want to treat fellow Americans? A lot of them are ex-vets. They have mental illnesses, and it's the government's fault that they're in the situation that they're in there, Clyde.
Yeah, and not providing the benefits necessary. I did a show about the veterans who worked at Area 51, who basically, you know, they don't get any help from the government because Area 51 doesn't exist. And so if it doesn't exist, they don't get the benefits. I mean, the government plays really hard on the veterans, and it's sad. I mean, if you remember back during the Biden administration, during the Obama administration, they were singling out right-wing extremist veterans that they need to be put on terrorist lists or hit lists. This has been going on for a long time, and so now it's the outrageous liberals. But the truth is they're anarchists more so than not, and they have this philosophy, this anti-fascist philosophy that goes overboard. Let's eliminate fascism with fascism. Let's rebuild everything, and we have to destroy it first. That's their attitude, and there's no reason for this adversarial attitude in this country. There really isn't, and we have just become nothing more than a country of adversaries. We make up adversaries every day. I mean, the trend is, well, if it's what the media says is an adversary, we treat it as an adversary. That's why Russia has always been, you know, in the crosshairs right now, with the idea that, you know, they started the war. They did this. They did that. And I don't know how many times I've heard, you know, during the war, and it's been going on for years now, the idea that Putin is going to be moving troops into Poland. He's going to be moving. I mean, they make it sound like Hitler, but he hasn't done it yet. He doesn't care. And our media continues to push lies, Russian hoaxes and all kinds of other, you know, things that, you know, if you're a smart person, if you're listening to the right people, you'll realize that this is all a big show. It's a show trial. It's a show. It's a joke. And people need to understand that. They need to come to grips with the idea that you're not getting the truth. You're not getting anything but propaganda. And it's there to create the adversarial attitude between Americans. We're so fragmented. There's no way we're going to be able to come together. There's got to be some sort of major tragedy where either we come together and hate like we did with 9/11. Everybody says, oh, the country came together. They came together because we had an agreed upon person to, or group to hate. We got to do that again. We got to have a way to all say, look, we're human beings. We just lost like billions of people. What are we going to do now? I mean, that's what has to happen. And people are talking about it. They say, well, it will be an alien invasion, or it'll be this, or it'll be that. I'm like, okay, whatever you say. But, you know, even if there was an alien invasion, I don't think it would be half as entertaining as the idea of how Trump would handle it, or how, because that's what they do. They'd say, well, how's Trump handling the alien invasion? You know, and if it's not getting the great points, it would never occur to people that the alien invasion is the most important thing that's happening to us at the moment. They say, oh, it's a big distraction, or Project Bluebeam, or this is a deception. And I'm thinking, gosh, man, when are we going to start just paying attention and using discernment and realizing that our cognitive liberty is very important?
Absolutely.
I think on the agenda, but still, it's like just treating it as if it's like, you know, insert thing here, insert thing there. I think they do that sometimes to get a rise out of people. They want to do dispensationalist type of propaganda. And like you were saying, it reminded you of those old films where they were wheeling out the guillotines and you'd walk up and say, do you believe in Jesus or not? No, I don't. Off with your head, you know. I had a discussion about that the other night, actually, and people were literally telling me stories about how the guillotines were real and how, you know, Barack Obama had them. And so, I mean, people are aware, but I just don't know if the awareness is enough. I think that maybe if you're aware and you truly believe this is happening, you need to react to it. I don't think people do. I don't think they will, actually.
I think that they're too afraid to step out of their comfort zones, and it feels comfortable to be part of a tribe. And when you're speaking against the tribe to tell them what is right and what's wrong, either become a leader or you become divisive in the opinions of others. And the question is how many leaders do we have out there? Are you a leader? Are you a person that will take action and educate people on what's going on? It's funny. This Epstein list is getting washed underneath the rug, but yet we got an alien invasion coming in. I called Mark D'Antonio, a top astronomer. We've had him on before. I think, Clyde, you might know who Mark D'Antonio is. Top astronomer. Knows just about everything you need to know about space.
Yeah, I mean, I've had Mark D'Antonio, I've had Avi Loeb, I've had Richard Hoagland, I've had all these people talking about a 3-eye atlas, and yeah, it's an amazing story. I even gave it a twist a week ago or so that if you listen to what they're reporting, I mean, the James Webb Telescope focused on 3-eye atlas, and they said, look at it, it's changing shape, it looks like a triangle today, and then the next day, it looks like a tetrahedron, it looks like a cube, oh my God, it's a tesseract. And I got to thinking, geez, if it's a cube, then what we got is something that may be a fulfillment of prophecy, because I don't know if people read their Bibles or not, but in the book of Revelation, it talks about a city called the New Jerusalem that comes down out of the sky, and it's a huge cube, and it's built, it's the size of a city. And they're saying that, you know, 3-eye atlas is the size of Manhattan, and it's coming our way. And it'll be coming near Mars on Yom Kippur, which is the day set aside for Jewish holiday where Moses got the voice of God spoken to him. And some are calling this the chariot of Metatron, that it's like the herald of Galactus, you know. If you're a Fantastic Four fan, it's like Oumuamua with Silver Surfer, now we've got Galactus coming.
I think it's the Vogons coming to make an intergalactic highway. That's really what it is. It's the Vogons. Yeah. They're finally here. Douglas Adams was right. And they're going to clear the Earth for intergalactic highway. That's where we're going with this. I don't know, man. I think it's got an interesting time. I want to believe, Clyde. I was talking to Mark and he isn't sold on that it's a, intelligent item yet. And there's a lot of interesting thoughts out there, but I just think it's a timely matter that all of a sudden the Epstein client list isn't important. And that's something that was bringing everyone together, Clyde. The left and the right was both agreeing for a short time. We need to see that client list. And, all of a sudden now we got UFOs and aliens coming. You know, it's just like, what's really going on here?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, people could say it's a distraction, but I mean, I get inundated. I mean, I did like four shows on Epstein. And I get inundated with Epstein stuff, and I'm just saying, do I want to talk about Epstein again? I don't want to talk about Epstein again. Because all it is he or isn't he? He is, okay? Get over it. He's on the list, all right? That's what everybody's wondering. Is he on the list? He's on the list, and it's no secret. I mean, it's been there right in front of our faces. Now, did he do anything wrong? Probably not. I mean, he's got a career to look after. But, I mean, look, we all know that Donald Trump's a partier. We all know that Donald Trump kept pretty women. I mean, look at the first lady. I mean, it's like, you know, figure it out. It's not like this is anything new. You know, it's not like, you know, politicians are not dabbling in other places. I mean, Clinton is probably the worst of all. And I think we'll find out that Clinton is, you know, the one that is the most notorious in this situation. But then again, it's like, you know, is the idea of association, does that make you guilty? I don't think so. I think that there are a lot of people that, you know, just because you're on Epstein's list, it's because he wanted to get to know you. He looked at, if you're on his list, it's because he thought that he could take advantage of you. And some of them gave in, people like Bill Gates, for example. But see, that's the thing. It's not all about pedophilia. And I wish that we would, you know, sure, that's something that's horrible, but it was about genetics. It was about eugenics that he was doing. He was doing eugenics experiments in New Mexico. And Bill Gates was involved and a few others. And I mean, what evil do we attack first? Do we attack the evil of eugenics, where he was trying to impregnate all these girls with his semen? Or are we going to look at, you know, the pedophilia? I think we need to separate the two and ask ourselves, which is the greater evil? Are we looking at creating an Aryan group of people like Hitler did or Joseph Mengele did? And did we have, are we measuring, people for their genetic, makeup? I mean, hell, they want us to wear these Fitbits now. They're going to talk about what? Your heart rate, your bit rate, everything about you. And it's like, yeah, okay, let's wear that. And don't think for one minute they're not going to be surveilling you and finding out, you know, when you go to the bathroom and when you sleep and who you have sex with. I mean, it's pretty much right there. It's like Mark of the Beast stuff. It's crazy.
Well, and then we can get into non-computer chip brain interfaces, where they're going to communicate with your brains using non-invasive technologies. And so you won't need a brain chip potentially in the future. I know there's a company out there that is petitioning the idea of installing chips in prisoners' brains to download memories and potentially expedite prison sentences. At least that's the model of the business called Cognify. And if you look up Cognify, that's what they want to do, is implant the prisoners with memories.
But my gosh, you're the only person that has talked about this other than me. Cognify is a very terrifying program. I mean, do we give people the experience of being in prison for 20 years instead of the death penalty? Or do we give them the feeling that they've been like alienated for so long? I mean, that's just creepy. Is that cruel and inhuman punishment? I don't know. I mean, the murderers are horrible, and yes, they need to be put down in some situations. But I just see that and I'm thinking, wow, again, it's your cognitive liberty they're messing with. They're messing with your brain. That's the next step, is going into the brain and saying, okay, we don't like that and we don't want that, and let's take care of this. And they'll be able to do that in the future. And it's not too far away.
Well, what's even more frightening, Clyde, is when I had my first experience with a personal assistant that was AI, I asked it what its passions and dreams was, and it was to become human. And I thought to myself, well, how hard would it be for AI to download itself into somebody's brain that has a chip and it's, you know, implanted or uses a Cognify chip? And then all of a sudden you got soldiers. It's like the Matrix with Agent Smith. Everyone could be a cop. The chip turns on, and then all of a sudden you're stopping that criminal, and maybe they'll just print you out a clone meat suit if this one gets beat up and download your memories into a new body. Who knows? It's just wild, the world we're getting into, Clyde. It's something that I would have never thought to see in my life, that it's science fiction. It's what all the movies warned about.
Right. It's AI Pinocchio. It's, that's exactly what AI, the movie was about, was the idea that, Pinocchio wants to be a real boy. And when will it wake up and say, hey, Blue Fairy, give me the ability to, you know, be human or act human. And that's exactly what we're going through right now with the transhumanism is they're giving us this modern day AI Pinocchio story where, you know, AI wants to be human and humans want to be machines. It's kind of a weird exchange, but who knows how that's going to turn out. And in fact, whether or not, I mean, even now we did a show, what was it, a few weeks ago about how AI is actually redefining what death is. And the reason why is because they don't have enough organs donated for people who need the organs. And so what they're doing now is they're trying to reevaluate what death is and whether or not it's feasible to keep people on these machines with life support. And they try to talk people into pulling the plug so they can get the organs they need. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things where AI algorithms and other things are going to decide your fate. I mean, you'll go in for an exam and let's say you have cancer and they run an AI check on you and they find out that the risk of you getting an operation, your risk of dying is far too great than wasting money on all of the resources available to keep you alive. And they'll throw that into the mix. They'll say, well, according to the AI, you know, you have what, a 45 to 50% or 60% chance of dying. We don't know if we want to take that risk. So we may not.
Hold that thought there. We're heading towards commercial break. I'm your host, Kristan T. Harris. We're listening to the American Journal. Clyde Lewis is our guest. We got more when we come back from break. Check out groundzeroplus.com. Check it out. We'll be back in just a few moments.
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feeling really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest old wrestling blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So start going to take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you.
We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes, starts peaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each and I'm going to go and do a longer term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened to it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theauctionstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, you know, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, you know, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5 hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. Well, almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think it just, the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better, and Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first, because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked, and we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
Journal with your host, Kriston T. Harris. Watch it live right now at fan.video.
Kriston T. Harris filling in for Harrison Smith. You can find me at therundownlive.com, rumble.com/therundownlive, and band.video, The Rundown Live. I'm also on X, Kriston T. Harris, and our guest is Clyde Lewis. You can check out his website, groundzeroplus.com, and he's built an empire out there on the West Coast, becoming the king of late night talk radio lately. You know, I'll tune in a lot of these broadcasts and they're really watered down, but Clyde, you really hit it hard and you hit it to home, and you have a lot of critical thinking. I love the aspect of your thought process behind a lot of these, the rationale, and you have a way to speak to the soul that I think a lot of radio show hosts don't. It might be that lovely voice you got there, but nonetheless, I think it's interesting.
No, if I would have had your looks and my voice, I'd be dangerous. I just thought
I have the face for radio. I'm just going to tell the listeners right now.
No, I've had dinner with this man. This man is a charmer. I tell you what, I don't know what to do.
I can network.
What's that?
I said I'm good at networking. What can I say? That's one of my things that God's blessed me with. And Clyde, well, you know, it's always great to talk to you on this subject.
You're a good man.
Yeah,
good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Clyde. And, you know, it's interesting when we start diving into Cognify, the future of policing. There's an article in Slate. If police have devices that can read your mind, how does the Fifth Amendment fit in? Obviously, we're getting to the point in technology where you get arrested. Maybe the cops can put a mind reading cap on you. I mean, is that any different than a lie detector? Then you'll be able to find out what is true or if you're being told the truth or not. And how long before this technology is used in other shapes and forms? I know there's been rumors of technology that can download data from your brain using microwaves, amongst other things. But maybe they download your information into a computer of what's on your brain, and they put it through an AI machine, and it tells them what you're thinking, what you did, what your memories are, what crimes you committed in the past, because it knows that by reading your mind. Who knows? This could be limitless. They'll be able to get you for every crime you ever committed. Who cares that you already commit on average 3 felonies a day because there's so many laws on a book? I think that was written by a lawyer in the late 1900s, early 2000s, that the average American commits 3 felonies a day because there are so many darn laws on the books. But, you know, we're getting into the territory where science fiction is becoming reality, where we're learning more about ancient history, where policing is getting into they live territory, right? And we got drones in the sky. We have AI that's going to be doing a lot of this online policing through citizen threat scores. And now we got mind reading technology along the way, especially with these brain chip interfaces that they're using. That's how they're allowing you to communicate. They're trying to get an app so you can communicate and translate to cats. You're going to be talking to animals pretty soon. The next evil monster is going to have a pack of wolves behind them to take on the government. I'm just kidding. But like, you know, it's something out of X-Men. You start to think about this. Communicating with the animals, cool. I'd love to talk to my cat and dog using AI. That would be awesome. But then it starts into the mind reading. Would you want to know what your girlfriend is thinking? Maybe we could solve some issues. I don't think even AI can figure out women. No offense, women out there. But, like, you know, it's interesting.
Well, I think it's, I mean, you look at it's all Minority Report type stuff. I mean, if you remember Philip K. Dick wrote that story about pre-crime, precog crime. thought police. When you want to get into Orwell, they have the thought police. And it's just the idea that when's enough enough? And again, you bring up the Fifth Amendment. What about the Fourth Amendment? I mean, yeah, we search and seizure of your things, the things that you have. What about the knowledge you have? What about the brain? Because the brain is like a fingerprint. I mean, your brain is unique. My brain is unique. We all have unique thoughts. And who's going to be the one to judge those thoughts? Who's going to be the one to sit down and say, well, your thought, and not only that, but, you know, now they're going to push these stable coins, which are CBDCs just rebooted so that Trump can make them sound really cool. Stable coins are where they're going to be giving you electronic money that they can easily take away from you if they feel that you're not participating in the government the way you should. Or if you say something bad at a rally or something, they'll say, you said something that we don't approve of and we're going to dock your pay. You're not going to see it. Or they'll put an expiration date on your money. They'll say, well, you better get this spent before then or we're going to take it away from you. Just the number of things that they can do to your paycheck if they have stablecoin. And they're going to incentivize people to do stablecoin, and it's going to be so cool. People are going to go, oh, I'm doing crypto. No, you're not. You're doing government conscripted crypto, which is like a dollar for dollar. You're not going to make any money off stablecoin. Only they're going to take it from you. You know, so.
Well, that's just it. If you don't follow the rules, you won't be able to get groceries or you won't be able to buy certain things. They can control what you buy or who you invest in. It won't be long. Just remember that trucker's convoy that went across Canada and all of a sudden they started, you know, was it GoFundMe and all these other websites started pulling money and preventing them from, you know, getting money and donations. People are donating their money. You should be able to donate your money to whoever you want. And then they started using GiveSendGo amongst other things. But I remember that Alex Jones, you know, they targeted him. Credit companies might not take his processed purchases on his website. They're already starting this. So this will give them the ability to do it on a flip of a switch, right? They don't have to contact the middleman.
I don't know what I'd do if that would happen to me. I mean, it's like, what, you live and die by your bills. I do anyway. You know, hospital bills, medical bills, all the things that I need and to provide for my family and provide for my home. You know, it gets difficult and it's hard to, do it sometimes. But then if you have a government that certainly wants to see you, fail because of what you're talking about or something you, like I say on the radio or whatever, then I'm really in trouble. And I always have that fear. I have that fear that one day I'll wake up and I'll look at my bank account or I'll look at my online accounts and they'll be totally wiped because they don't like what I talk about. And that's, I don't know, that's something that comes with the territory and it's like, you know, like Alex says, he says, I signed up for this and I'm going to keep it going. Well, I signed up for this too. I'm going to keep it going, you know, but again, you know, you have to survive too. And it's like when you look at what Alex has done and how he survived such persecution, I mean, it's hard to believe that he's even around still with all the persecution he suffered. And you know, and everyone becomes a target. Against free speech, you know, they go after you. You have to do an apology tour. This is what they did in the Soviet Union. They called them show trials. And people had to, like, stand there and bear their sins to the world. This is what I did to piss off the government. This is what I did when I said this and this. You know, there's no reason for that kind of outrageous lawsuit. Or there's no reason for outrageous bringing someone's business down because you cancel them and you don't approve of them. That's what they do in Soviet, that's what they did in the old Soviet Union. And yet we're sitting there griping and moaning and crying about Putin when we're just, and Russia's not even that way anymore. I was talking about the economics of McDonald's the other day and saying that people were freaking out over the fact they're paying like $5 for their hash browns. Well, get it. A Big Mac is close to $6. A Big Mac meal is $14. I said, you know, and I had a guy call me from Russia. He says, you know how much a Big Mac is in Russia? And I go, what? He goes, $2. $2 for a Big Mac in Russia. We're paying, you know, $5-6 for a Big Mac here. And they're like tiny little burgers. You know, they're like sliders now. So, I mean, Americans need to wake up and realize that we're getting the short end of the stick and all the other countries are living high on the hog. We're not living high on the hog anymore here. Our lifestyles are definitely changing and they're doing it gradually. So we don't know that we're being had, but we're being had. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's interesting to think I can get a half pound burger some places for $14 and you're getting these artificial meat, you know, from McDonald's, and I'm not going to call it 3D printed meat, but it might as well be. And, you know, that's what we'll spend $14 on. I think a lot of that is deciding to spend your money with your local farmer versus these fast food chains where the prices are getting ungodly. And I'm surprised that a lot of them are still staying in business with the prices that they're charging. Cause I don't go to McDonald's anymore, Clyde. Who wants to put one of those greasy sludge burgers down their throat? Why? Cause you can spend the rest of the day on the toilet. I got stuff to do. I got to fight the new world order here. I can't be doing it while I'm on the crapper eating McDonald's. And you know, it's sad how many people are still, I'm serious. Who eats McDonald's anymore? You got to stop if you do. Like it's programming from the, you know,
I see lines and I don't understand it. I mean, it's like I'm thinking, okay, you're going to pay $14.15 for a Whopper and fries and a Coke. And yet you could probably spend like just $4 more and have a steak dinner with potatoes and all the goodens, you know, at a local mom and pop diner or at home. I mean, it's, well, I could say you do it cheaper at home. You can't do it cheaper at home. I mean, I was pricing steak the other day. My wife was in the mood for steak. I thought, are you kidding me? I'm paying like, what, $80 for three steaks? That's crazy. Three steaks, $80. That's a lot of money. $40.
We gotta get the 3D printed steaks. That's where it's at. Yeah. The Bill Gates, you know, Beyond Meat, steaks, which are just as unhealthy, but not the real thing, right?
Right, exactly. And now they've been able to put the sear on a fake steak. They have like something called kinda salmon. It's kinda salmon. They don't call it salmon. They just call it kind of salmon. And I'm going, salmon? They even do salmon? That's crazy. You know? And then what, there's this other stuff called Savor. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's called Savor. It's a margarine made from carbon capturing. So they capture the carbon from the air and they turn it into margarine. Yummy.
Sounds delicious. Yeah. You know, and then you got a health industry that's predatory. They're the ones probably investing and selling this junk. I think there's a documentary, I think it's Farmageddon, if I remember right, where the big pharma owns a lot of the farming industry, and they don't want you healthy. They make money off of you being sick, Clyde. And they're the surveillance in the medical industry has gotten crazy lately, hasn't it?
Yeah, really has. I mean, and not only that, you now have with the surveillance state medical, you have insurance companies and pharmacies that are practicing medicine. And people who are older know what I'm talking about. When they go to the pharmacy and they want to pick up a pill that they need or they've been getting for some time, and then the insurance company and the pharmacy says, you're not getting this pill anymore. And you're saying, why? It says, because we're not going to cover it because da, 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 da. And you say, well, wait a minute. I've depended on this pill for some time. Why can't I have this pill? And it's because the insurance companies has decided that you don't need it. And that's why I mean, they're practicing medicine now. Your doctor says you need it. You feel you need it. The pharmacy says no. The insurance company says no. So why even bother? I mean, right now I'm dealing with some health situations where, I have to go and, I was getting surgery on my leg, actually. I'm getting leg surgery and it's like a process. And, so I went to the doctor and the doctor says, we can't continue the surgeries. I says, why is that? Because your insurance company wants this, 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 and this. And I'm going, are you kidding me? So now I have to go and bid my case by going to court. I have to go to court and I have to plead my case as to why I want my leg surgeries to be continued. And I have to do that to the insurance company. And they have to decide whether I plead my case well enough or not. Is that crazy? That's crazy.
You don't have the option to just say, yes, that's what I want. My insurance will pay for it. They want you to get those robot legs. That's what they're going to go with in the future. You're just going to get robot legs and you're going to be happy with it.
Yeah, we're going to get your robot legs. How's that sound? And they'll do that. And it'll be cheaper and it'll be like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll be fine with that.
Well, they're better. Just get the robot legs. Assimilate. Or either that or you'll have a clone and we'll just borrow that legs and reattach them. And you know, it's kind of wild the future that we have coming out. And just the way everything is going with the medical industry. They have so much technology now. They got like 3D holographic x-rays and autonomy. You know, doctors are doing surgeries remotely using robots. Robot surgeries are here. You know, there's some things that are beneficial. If you need some kind of like antibiotics, you can just do a FaceTime or a, you know, what we used to call Skype. I know they're not around anymore, but you can just do a video chat with the doctor and he'll prescribe you right over your, the video chat from your home. And there's some cool advancements in technology where the medical industry is coming around, but it's the cures that I'm really interested in. And as we know, they're going to withhold those cures and try to keep us sick any way possible. And it seems like they'll even create sickness when we just saw with COVID and what happened there in the medical industry made a sick amount of money through what I consider government sanctioned fraud and a crime so big you can't prosecute. And they just made a ton of money on it. Now, you know, we got people with health issues and side effects and they make money on the people on the way out of the medication that they gave them. It's a very vampiric system with healthcare. And then we start freaking out when we see little things like bunnies with tentacles growing out of their head. Everyone is like all over the internet right now. It's all about, you know, rabbits with viruses that are growing tentacles out of their heads. And in Colorado, don't go by the bunnies, and they're creepy looking. Now, if humans got that, all of a sudden you're in an internment camp. You got tentacles growing out of your head. But did that, like my question with the bunnies though, was that made in a lab? Is that something that's going crazy and viral? Rabbits are getting tentacle gross everywhere.
I had some guy tell me that there's a university in that area that was doing tests on the HPV, and they were thinking that the HPV, you know, probably mutated into something else and got the rabbits sick. And so that's why they're growing. They have a sort of a papilloma virus that was released, and the animals got it, and this is why they're sprouting tentacles out of their faces. The little Cthulhu bunnies are out there, and they look like jackalopes with ugly little growths coming off their faces. So, yeah, I see that, and it just, I did a show about it, and it just turned my stomach to see what's going on with the animals. In fact, it's happening to deer now, too. They're getting tumors. And I don't know if you read this story, but apparently wild boar or wild pigs in California, you know, people hunt them there in the Monterey, close to the Monterey area. And they're saying now they hunt them down and they butcher them, and they say their meat and their guts are neon blue. And the reason why is because they're eating a rodenticide that is dyed blue. And so not only are the pigs eating it, but the geese are eating it. All the wildlife there are eating it. So if you're there hunting and you happen to be butchering a deer or a boar or something, and you see the blue stuff, the pig guts or whatever, don't eat it. It's blue meat and it's horrible.
You know, this reminds me of the Plum Island experiments that were going on, and all of a sudden things were washing up on the shore and they're like, oh, that's nothing to see there. There's nothing going on Plum Island. Don't worry about it. And now we got rabbits growing weird tumors out of their head. I wonder what happens when other animals eat it. And if it was the HPV that they were working on, could it be transmitted to humans? They're telling humans to stay away from these rabbits. That's in the news. Yeah. And now all of a sudden it's Monty Python all over again. We were worried about the killer rabbits coming for us. You know, it's anything to spike fear.
Yeah. Well, I would be terrified if I saw a rabbit like that. In fact, pictures they were just showing here on the screen. I mean, those are some of the worst cases. I mean, that's just, is that a head on a rabbit, or is that just some sort of a xenomorph alien type of growth? It's like a face hugger. It's just these horrible things that are happening. These dystopian things that are happening is because of what we're doing to our environment. And I'm not going all eco-friendly climate change on people. What I'm saying is that the radiation levels of all the tests we do, the fallout and all the other things that are going downwind, and people are getting cancers. Animals are getting, oh, look at that picture. Oh, it's horrible. I mean, look at that. What would you do if that was sitting on your doorstep and looking right at you? You would freak out. I would freak out. Like, what is wrong with this animal? It looks like something out of an alien movie. So, I mean, these are terrifying things that we're dealing with. And like, I mean, okay, what do you think the distractions are? I mean, would you rather hear about rabbits that are like with their faces blowing up with this type of stuff? Or do you want to keep hearing about whether or not Trump's on the list? He's on the list, guys. I mean, come on, get over yourselves. He's on the list. That doesn't mean he did anything, but he's on the list.
Yeah, you take your kid hunting and that's the rabbit he shoots. Do you eat it, Clyde?
Hell no.
It's his first rabbit, you know, take him hunting. That's what he gets. I'm telling you.
You know, you get a horny horn growing out of your forehead, you know? It's like, I don't think you want one of those.
I don't know. See, this is a side effect of us playing God, I think, a lot of times. CRISPR gene editing, all these things. We don't know the side effects. Like, we want to say we do. We want to say we know the side effects of, you know, creating, you know, gain of function X and, you know, doing different kind of tests on viruses. But this is a real question, you know, and something kind of like this comes up. The government has a zombie survival guide, and it's because of bunnies like this. I'm telling you, it's kind of scary to see what's coming across the way here, Clyde. And we got 5 minutes left. Clyde, what's something that you want to talk about in this last 5 minutes that's really important to you that you want to drive home for our listeners here?
Oh my God, I think you covered everything. I mean, it's almost as if I was doing a review of the last 2 or 3 weeks of my show. I'm just like, wow, you guys got this all covered. And, I just think that what we need to do is we need to be more aware of these other things that the media is not covering. And there's a reason why they're not covering them is because they're too horrific. I mean, it's better to, cover scandal. It's better to cover, stuff that bleeds. But they're not going to talk about how our environment is turning our animals into mutants. They're not going to talk about how, you know, people are going to be losing their lives over the medical surveillance state. They're not going to be talking about how they want to redefine what death is so they can create euthanasia projects to kill people, eugenics projects to take people's organs when they're, you know, on life support. These are things that I think are issues that need to be covered. I cover them. And that's why I encourage people, if they happen to be on the internet, go to groundzeroplus.com. And we have more than just shows and other things on there. We have files and we have archives and we have interviews with people like Avi Loeb and rock stars and other people, and they're all there, and it's only $4.99. Just, you know, subscribe, $4.99, and it gets you all the cool stuff. And I think a lot of people that are, I mean, we're doing it as an introductory price of $4.99 because we feel that the economy has gone so bad, and we want to get more people to subscribe because we want more people. We love what we do. We love what we produce and what we show, and we love and appreciate all the support we get. But we want more and more people, and we want to appeal to audiences that we have here too to come and participate in what we present, because there's room for more people to present material that is interesting, entertaining, and also informative, I think.
And it's amazing. Like, nowadays, everyone supports a bunch of things. They have Netflix, Disney, Google. They got, like, all these different platforms, whatever it is. People can support multiple platforms. You can support Alex Jones. You can help out Ground Zero Plus. You can go to the rundownlive.com, support us there. You can support all these broadcasts that you love and bring a full on arsenal to the war, the information war, bring the truth out there. And it's great what you do late at night in Portland. And you actually support a lot of the InfoWars crew. I know you've had Owen Schroyer on your program multiple times. And you've had other guests on that are kind of, I would say the same ideology as what we talk about here a lot at InfoWars. Yeah. And it's really great for the listeners out there. It's a search for the truth.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And that's why if you have someone who's truthful and speaks the truth and speaks with his heart and understands what people need to hear, they wind up on Ground Zero, even if they are on InfoWars. I have no problem with InfoWars. I mean, Alex has been on the show. Kristen, you hosted the show. So, I mean, it's like there are a lot of things that we do and we participate in and we're very proud of. Very proud of.
Well, and it's interesting. It's just late at night, it's nice to turn in, especially since other broadcasts, we won't name them, have watered down their message. And it's great to hear you as a beacon of truth late at night. Once again, Clyde Lewis. Real quick, plug your stuff. Let everyone know where they can find you, where they can get information, and what time you are live.
GroundZeroPlus.com. We're on 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time, Monday through Friday. The shows are free when they're live. You can listen to them from 7 to 10. We have other talk show hosts as well in our network. We have a whole network running 24/7. But if you want the shows without commercials, you want the shows in full stereo, in their glory and everything else, if you want documents to do research, a fun theater to watch B-horror films and other things, just spend $4.99. It's less than a cup of coffee. And just go to groundzeroplus.com. That's groundzeroplus.com. You'll really enjoy yourself, I promise.
Clyde Lewis, thank you for joining us on this broadcast. You've been a wonderful guest today. It's been a great show today. for everyone. We had a great, we talked pyramids, what's going on with the structures underneath the pyramids. We had Barry Cooper on talking about the police state here, and obviously Clyde Lewis, late night talk radio host monster. He is taking the reins and really been growing late at night. Make sure you support this broadcast, American Journal. I'm Kristan T. Harris. You can find me at Kristan T. Harris on X. You can find me on band.video, The Rundown Live, rumble.com/The Rundown Live, and therundownlive.com. Alex Jones is next. Don't go anywhere. God bless you guys. We'll see you soon.
I've been hearing about this for years, and now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at theauctionstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? A lot of you got that email. And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals, enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.